call this evening's meeting of the San Diego Union High School District Board of Trustees to order and ask Ms. Schultz to please read our protocol.
Welcome to the meeting of the San Diego Union High School District Board of Trustees. If you wish to speak regarding an item on the agenda, please complete a speaker slip located at the sign-in desk and present it to the secretary to the board prior to the start of the meeting. When the board president invites you to the podium, please state your name before making your presentation. Persons wishing to address the board on any school-related issue not elsewhere on the agenda are invited to do so under the public comments item. If you wish to speak under public comments, please follow the same directions for speaking to agenda items. In the interest of time and order, presentations from the public are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. The total time for agenda and non-agenda items shall not exceed 20 minutes. An individual speaker's allotted time may not be increased by a donation of time from others in attendance. In accordance with the Brown Act, unless placed on the published agenda, no action shall be taken by the board on non-agenda items. However, the board may 1. Acknowledge receipt of the information, 2. Refer the matter to staff for further study, or 3. Refer the matter to a future agenda. In compliance with Government Code Section 54957.5, agenda-related documents that have been distributed to the board less than 72 hours prior to the board meeting have been available for review on the district website or at the district office. All matters listed under consent are those in which the board has previously deliberated or which can be classified as routine items of business. An administrative recommendation on each item is contained in the agenda supplements. There will be no separate discussion of these items prior to the time the Board of Trustees votes on the motion unless members of the board, staff, or public request specific items to be discussed or pulled from the consent. To address an item on the consent calendar, please follow the procedure described under comments on agenda items. As a courtesy to all meeting attendees, please set cell phones and electronic devices to silent mode and engage in conversations outside the meeting room. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. And I'd like to welcome all of you here this evening. We do have a fairly full agenda, but I appreciate all of you coming out this evening, whether it's to make a comment or just to hear what is happening here this evening. So thank you for coming, and if you would all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the board has previously met in closed session and has a few items of student discipline where we need to take action.
Correct. And there was no action in closed session.
Oh, correct. No action in closed session, but we have met and we have 3 items to bring for votes at this point in time. So the first is case number 2018-069-SD, and it is to approve the expulsion of case 2018-069-SD for violation of California Ed Code sections 48900C, D, O, and 48900.4 and 48915C3 for the period March 16, 2018 through March 16, 2019. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. This is a roll call, please, Ms. Schultz.
Mr. Salazar?
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Mirror?
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. I also need a motion to approve the expulsion of case number 2018071-SD for violation of California Ed Code Section 48900.7 for the period March 16, 2018 through March 16, 2019.
Well, so moved.
Thank you. Do you have a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. Again, a roll call, please.
Mr. Salazar?
No.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. Thank you. And the third is I need a motion for the expulsion of case number 2018073SD for violation of California Ed Code section 48915C4 for the period March 16, 2018 through March 16, 2019. Do you have a motion, please?
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. And roll call, please.
Mr. Salazar?
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. Thank you. Which brings us to approval of our agenda. Let's see. For March 15th, regular board meeting this evening here as presented.
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And that carries. Let's.
You know, we do have one item asked to be pulled from consent.
Okay.
Oh, I have a number.
I've got a couple.
Okay.
All right. So before we take
11B and 15A3.
15A3.
We have 15B3.
Okay.
And I have 15A2.
Okay, so I have 11B, 15A2 and 3, and 15B3 being pulled for separate consideration. So, is that what I heard?
Yes.
15B3?
That's where we have a speaker slip.
Okay. All right, thank you. So, may I have a motion to approve the agenda with the exception of those items?
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed at this point?
No.
That carries then. It will move forward from that perspective. We need to approve our minutes for the February 8th, 2018 board workshop and our regular meeting, and the February 21st, 28th, and March 7th board workshop and special meetings. I will take them. So first it's February 8th board workshop and regular meeting, and our March 7th special meeting. Mm-hmm. If I could have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Thank you.
And second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mm-hmm. February 21st is our board workshop. A motion to approve?
Uh-huh.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
And we have one abstention. Okay, thank you. And February 20th, special meeting. And then it's
approved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
And abstain. Okay, we have one. That's right. I forgot we had a few people miss that busy month. Okay. Which brings us to student updates. And we're missing a few students. I'm not sure we ever got anything submitted for those missing, so we will just have the three of you report. So we'll start with Scott, please.
Okay, so on February 28th, we partnered with the San Diego Blood Bank and had a drive where both students and parents could donate. Then after that, we had a new student ice cream social where all new students were invited. If they're new to the district or new to LCC, they're invited to basically come to the ice cream and hang out at lunch and get some ice cream. Ryan Silcox, a sophomore, had a very successful clothing drive for local foster children. The children could then basically shop through like a makeshift store, so that was really cool. Our boys varsity soccer team made it to the CIF finals and then went to state. Lacrosse boys and girls teams are both undefeated so far. Juniors, so like the entire, basically all juniors who are in physics, which is a majority of them, are working on their Rube Goldberg projects, which is basically like a long series of energy changes that causes, like, in the end, the candle to blow out. So that's kind of like our main project for this entire semester. So that's like a big thing going on. On Tuesday and Wednesday, the math club and math department held many activities for Pi Day in the student center, including we had a digit recital, a pie eating contest, and then culinary arts basically made pies for every student. And then in the coming month, we have ASB elections. Our ASB advisor, Ms. Rector, has been working really hard along with Ms. Eichlin to create like the perfect course pathway for ASB and peer counseling. A new program coming to LCC. We have dodgeball starting next week. Students are basically created teams of eight with their friends, and they're going to compete next week in the gym until like one team remains. And then we have our annual Morph Dance on March 30th. So ASB is in the process of like selling tickets and planning for that. It's a little bit difficult just with like the recent retirement of our finance office person named Susie, but we're basically like just being creative and like making sure like we get it done. And then finally, yesterday, many students, including myself, chose to participate in a walkout to the field to honor the 17 students who passed away in the recent Parkland High School shooting. The walkout was student-organized, but administration did a really good job making sure like everyone was safe and respectful, which everyone, of course, was, and it was just like, a really good event overall.
Thank you. And Gabby for San Diego Academy.
So this Tuesday, we finished a game called Senior Out, and so that's pretty much a giant game of tag in between all the seniors, but you can't get tagged if you're within 5 feet of another person, so it was kind of a great way to bring the school together because everyone's just grabbing people, trying not to get tagged, but it's fun. This week is our Spirit Week, and today's theme was Safari Day, and we had a scavenger hunt, so we had these little animals hidden around the school, and if you found one, you could go to the ASB room and turn it in for a prize, so there was candy, there was a prom ticket, and donuts. And then tomorrow it's theme 50s Friday, and we're going to have root beer floats at lunch, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And also today at lunch, we have Japanese exchange students right now, and they did a dance for us, and that was really fun to watch. And we also have Spanish exchange students with us at the same time, and we had a big soccer game with them with the ASB class. We lost very badly, but I mean, Yellow Boat is a play going on right now. I think it opens this weekend. It's for Theater for a Cause, and they've been doing teasers for the classes, so we went and watched that, and it looks really good, so if you want to see that, you should. Our girls' basketball team won CIF and went into state, and it was really cool to send them off to state. We had all the students, or not all, a lot of students come out of class and do a big student tunnel and ring the bell tower just to kind of show them our support. And then we also participated in the walkout yesterday, and everyone felt really safe, and it went really well.
Thank you. And Sarah Trigg for Sunset.
How's everyone doing tonight? Good. Okay. Since our last board meeting, many positive events have continued to unfold on our campus. The planning and design process for our fresh new Sunset High School campus continues to move forward, with construction expected to get underway during the summer of 2019. Mr. Williams' garden project continues to pick up steam, and it looks great. And on February 15th, Mr. Marvel and Mr. Ayala supervised a field trip to Kaiser Permanente. The visit provided all attending students with the unique opportunity to observe and consider future careers in the healthcare industry. A quick thank you out to Mr. Ayala and Mr. Marvel for making this an opportunity. In early March, Sunset students took the ASVAB test to assist with identifying interests, abilities, and skills with available occupations and careers in the marketplace. ASVAB stands for Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, and I actually took the test, and I'm really excited for my results because I want to know if there's anything more I can do for my career, my future career. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the results are going to come in a week. So. On March 5th, educators from Back Bay High School visited Sunset in order to review our educational format and scheduling. They remain interested in replicating our systems on their campus, which would basically be like a twin Sunset.
Okay.
On March 8th, students participated in another field trip to Maricosta Technical Career Institute. Mm. And as for 12th grade support for college planning continues to get underway at Sunset. Finally, the PALS program and Interact coordinated efforts to provide goods and services for our students in need. And each person who's giving is anonymous, and it's really nice because kids in need, just they get groceries, and it's like it's a gift bag.
Right.
And my friend got one, and it was really nice and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your reports. Mr. Salazar.
Well, besides attending two out of the three special board workshops, which most of you were at all of them, I also had the opportunity to go to the charter school, Seoul, and visit them and take a tour of their facilities. And it was very, very nice, obviously, and they have a very good program going on, at least what I could observe. They started off, I think, with 37 students. I think they're now, the place seemed packed. It had, I think they said 75. They believe in the fall, next September, they will be at about 180 to 200. They said, to let you know, they will definitely be pursuing that Prop 39 at that time. And they told me to put an open invitation to all of you that you haven't, if you'd like to visit them, they'd love to meet all of the administrators as well as the board members. So it was a very good meeting. I enjoyed meeting them, their enthusiasm, and their it's slightly different type of school for the right type of students. It's just ideal. It's you can't get lost there. It's small. And and they also participated in that walkout. I was there right after that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was very good. So that's it for me.
Thank you. Mrs. D'Alessandro, please.
Well, I attended all of the board workshops. In addition, I attended, along with Mrs. Herman and Mr. Dill, the Solana Beach School Relations Committee meeting. Solana Beach is embarking on a lot of changes in their district, updating campuses, and of course we've been participating with them in terms of having them use our portables that we had used during the building of the new Earl Warren. They're using it while they build the new skyline. It's been a great partnership.
When is that skyline going to be finished?
What?
August.
August.
Yep.
Wow, they're going to have a lot to do.
Once they get the roof on, they'll move quickly.
Oh, okay, yeah. Wow, that's great.
Yes, good. I also attended, along with Mrs. Herman and Mr. Dill, the CCA Foundation Gala. Oh, what a night. And it was incredible. What a great, great party. CCA always throws a great party. This time they had a Tony Award winner, Christian Hoff, present, working with the kids. The kids performed. Christian Hoff performed. It was a really enjoyable evening, and kudos to CCA Foundation. They really do a good job. That's it.
Great.
And Mrs. Hergesheimer was there.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it was.
And ditto on that. It was a great night and such a great opportunity for the students to get a chance to work with someone, a Tony Award winner. And I think he worked with them for a number of weeks. So
why was he out? Does he live here?
I think he does live in the area. I also attended CCA's High School Choices Night, and it was just great to see how they were promoting themselves. And Jack was there representing the school, giving a speech, even breaking down equipment afterwards. He was kind of a one-man show. He did a great job. And they also had speeches and musical performances and an informational video, so that was nice to see. I went to SDA Choices Night, which was also great. I missed part of the part in the gym. I had the timing off a little bit, but they started with informational booths outside, gave the prospective students and parents a chance to look at the clubs and sports and different departments, and especially the Japanese program. They were quite aggressive in their promotion, so I thought that was really fun to see. They were very excited about that. Attended the board governance workshop and the special board meeting. A ditto on the Solana Beach School Relations Committee. We also spent a lot of time talking about school safety with the Solana Beach District and the City Council people in Solana Beach. So it was nice to kind of hear what the elementary school district was doing and how we're coordinating those efforts, especially with law enforcement. On March 10th, I went to the first, it's called the first robotics competition, which was phenomenal. Mrs. D'Alessandro was also, Mrs. Ferguson was also there. We had four of our high schools, four of our high schools were in attendance and competing, and we got a chance to see all of them compete at least in one match. Very exciting, really such a impressive display of not only engineering that the students go through, but marketing and a chance to collaborate with one another, because the competition itself, you are given teams to work with that you don't know in each competition. And
did they teach you the new word, co-opetition?
Oh, no, I missed that. Well, I did learn a lot. We got a chance to talk to some of the alumni mentors and coaches and each team. So, yeah, they do have their own language that I'm not fluent in yet, but it was, the next day I couldn't go, but I watched afterwards the end of the competition, and it appears that Team Paradox from SDA and then CCA's team both will move on. They actually competed together, which was nice to see, and so they'll be moving on as wild cards, and they won other awards, so yay district.
World championships.
Really exciting. You really have to go. And then yesterday, I did go to Torrey Pines, kind of a last-minute decision, but I really wanted to see what was happening on the campuses with the student walkout. And ditto on what happened at your campuses. It seemed very, the students organized it. The staff was prepared and very peaceful, 17 minutes. There were different opinions on items, but everyone listened to each other very respectfully, and I was glad to be able to see the students had that opportunity. So,
thank you.
Oh, let's see here. I went to the State of the County. Christy Gaspar is the County Chair Supervisor, and they were talking about, they were renewed about the issues with the homeless. And I thought it was great because they're going to be trying to get them rehabilitated and back into a successful life. And I also met with the deputies and sheriffs at DSA, and they were talking about getting a community resource officer, which I've always talked about, and also cameras, which we've been continuing. I've been emailing about that. It's very important that we get more safety in our schools, and I was unfortunate I didn't see the budget tonight, Eric. I was also at the Half Moon Marathon here in Encinitas, and you know, it's great because parents and families, there's about 25,000 people there. I was so glad I went. Went to College Night at LCC. My son Scotland's a junior this year. Thought it was great. They talked about applying, and I'll have to talk to Mike about how we're not using ambiance anymore. And I also went to golf night, parent night, and the swimming night, and people talked about how we had picked up the fees for swimming, but I have to tell you, it was very expensive. My son's in golf and in swimming, and I realized that we talked about going to functions on this board, and I don't think anyone on this board should go free. It's expensive for us, for parents to pay for fees for kids. And I think that we're on this board to serve you and not to go to functions unless we pay, because guess what? That takes money out of your pocket. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. As was reported, I made it to some of the same workshops and meetings and events. But in addition, I was at San Diego Academy for one of their daytime tours, pre-selection, and the presentation was in the media center and started out with some of the students on the campus. Got to do that. I also made it to the event at the Lamb Family Home for Torrey Pines. Thank you. Foundation event, in addition to the CCA event. So that was also another very nice location, very nice event. A little drizzly outside, but we got back and forth to our cars. And I think that's really all I had that was new and in addition to what other board members did. So Mr. Dill, please.
Certainly. Well, I made it to all of the Choices nights except for Torrey Pines, because we were here that night, and I know that we've already sent out notifications to families that they were able to get into their first choices, those that went through high school selection. So Dr. Grove will have a little bit more on that later on. So we feel really good about that for I don't know how many years in a row that we've been able to meet the demand of 100% of our students who have gone through the high school selection process. with the student demonstration. I don't know why my microphone isn't on, so I'll try to project. With the student demonstrations, I was at Torrey Pines High School, and we had folks from the district office who went to all of the campuses just to provide additional adult support for those campuses. And what I would like to say is, once again, our students have shown the adults how to behave. And, you know, having seen other walkouts and demonstrations in the past, when our students are leading that, they've always been impressive in how they comport themselves and how they are open to listening to other students and having conversations with each other and not breaking down into yelling, shouting, and factions. And so I was at Torrey Pines, but was getting updates from all of the other schools just to make sure that we were seeing and hearing the same thing, which is what we expected. I think our biggest challenge of the day was keeping adults off campus, because there were many people who wanted to join in. And so, you know, that was my biggest accomplishment of the day, was keeping a few. I was at one of the entrances and just keeping folks and directing them back out onto the street. I kept two adults off, but I kept five kids on, and who were trying to leave. but I'll say, sorry, Mr. Salazar, at the front, I was at the back of the campus. We had somebody at the, I could see cars coming up to the driveway, and a campus supervisor was turning them around down there. And so they were out on the front on Delmar Heights Road. And so, you know, it was a few dozen parents that were there. I heard there was a pretty big crowd at SDA of adults who were out on the sidewalk respecting that this was a student-led event and adults weren't meant to be part of this. And so they kept their distance off of campus so that we could maintain a safe environment. But once again, and just as two walkout protests that we had last school year, the kids were peaceful, respectful, and got back to class to minimize the disruption to the instructional environment. And I think that's the template. As long as, you know, we continue to have that, we will not run afoul of the First Amendment. And our teachers, you know, understood that their duty during that time was to supervise and not to enable or participate. And so, they let the kids do their thing.
Did you find out what percentage of the students participated?
No, we weren't taking a head count. At the middle schools, we were getting 100 to 200 kids at each of the middle schools. So that's a fraction of, 10 to 20% of most of our middle schools. I'd say probably, anywhere from 300 to 500 kids is what I've seen. I don't know if Scott or Gabby have an idea, an estimate.
We went around the entire field, so I'd say probably about 800, 700, 600.
Okay.
Oh, that's a lot.
So close to half. Okay, so about close to half for year two. The quad was filled at Torrey Pines, and I wasn't at. I didn't hear exactly from CCA, but I heard it was a pretty well attended event. So, once again, another successful event that was run by students, not authorized, sanctioned by the district in any way, but, in working with kids, we managed to keep them safe and get them back into class. I'll just say one update for me. Next week I will be in Sacramento, and I will have a full schedule that day when I'm up there. I'll be meeting with Assemblymember Chavez, with Senator Atkins, with Assemblymember Weber, an assembly member, Tony Thurmond, who's running for the state superintendent of public instruction, so I'll get some time with him. I'm meeting with CalSTRS and CalPERS with their advocates so that we can talk about how we might team up to get some pressure, relieve the pressure on the STRS and PERS rates. And then I'm also expected to testify at the Assembly Education Committee to advocate for a bill that would provide additional CTE funding and also increasing the LCFF base over 7 years. So that bill that sets a new aspirational target to increase the local control funding formula. So I'm going to have a full day and a half in the Capitol doing all of that.
Who's bringing the legislation forward? Is that Rocky?
No, the CTE is Assemblymember O'Donnell, who's from Long Beach, and the one that is introduced the bill to increase the local control funding formula base, that's Assemblymember Murasuchi, who's from the Torrance area.
Okay, thanks.
All right, well, thank you for doing all of that. And that brings us to our school department
updates, and we have Mr. Camacho, principal of San Diego Academy, here this evening.
Hi.
Welcome. Mm.
Good to see everybody. Members of the board, Superintendent Dill, associate superintendents, of course, our student representatives, and a special hello and congratulations to Gabby and, of course, our members in the audience. So now in my 18th year in our distinguished district, it remains my distinct honor, and I feel extremely grateful for the opportunity to be standing in front of you tonight as principal now of San Diego High School Academy. Although only 7.5 months into my time at SDA, it truly feels like home. Not because I'm there a lot more than I was at but really, it's just reflective of how I feel our students, our staff, and our learning community. And I'm just super lucky to have the opportunity to serve them. So while there are many wonderful things happening in our campuses around the district, tonight I really want to focus on an update on the career technical education pathways being offered across the district, but especially at SDA. So today, what you will find among our district's campuses are many thriving CTE pathways, ranging from engineering, software development, video and film production, to graphic design, theater, and music, to name a few. Students can now explore a range of fields and have rich experiences that tap into the world of work outside of the classroom. So at SDA, I'm proud of the rich, engaging, and industry-aligned curriculum we are providing to our students through pathways such as design, visual, and media arts, cabinetry, millwork, and woodworking, food services and hospitality, software and systems development, machine and forming technology, systems, diagnostics, service and repair, and finally, engineering and design. So I've bragged a lot about the incredible experience of our culinary arts students as now they're receiving the services of the new facility that opened really in late November of this school year. So I'd like to highlight one of the many out-of-classroom experiences that our students are participating in. But by the way, if you haven't seen the new Culinary Arts building, and if you like those cooking shows, like Hell's Kitchen and those sorts of things, it's exactly what it feels like when you walk in. It's just a phenomenal learning facility that's going to serve our generations for years to come. But in particular, I want to highlight, and you've alluded to, the robotics team. So Team Paradox is SDA's robotic team, and there's one entity that is able to combine their CTE classroom experience in real-world competitive environment as they design, build, market, and compete against hundreds of other robotic teams around the world. A huge congratulations is due to the SDA robotics team who competed last Friday and Saturday at the regional competition at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. With over 60 teams, our team made it to the finals. They lost by a few points, but earned the Excellence in Engineering Award, and of course, it's sponsored by Delphi, which allows them to compete in the World Championships in Houston, Texas. So that is in a few weeks. But first, I'll have a stop in Idaho at the end of March. So I'd like to publicly express also my gratitude to our parents and mentors who directly support Team Paradox. There's a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. It's very busy. I've said it many times. Our high schools in particular, are like small cities. Mm-hmm. And that engineering department and the machine shop and the wood shop, and you can show up on a Sunday at 8 p.m. and it's busy, the light's always on, so it's really neat to see them thriving. And moving on, so while they don't need my validation, I'd like to quickly state how proud I am of all of our school site administrators or administration teams and executive cabinet members for all the hard work and diligence with regards to the safety concerns of our students, parents, and staff members in recent weeks. There's no doubt that campus safety is paramount. At SDA, we continue to be committed to the safety and wellness of all. I'm proud of the many student services, activities, and programming that always aim to improve student connectedness and wellness. I'm just as proud of our students for sharing their concerns, engaging in honest discussion at monthly student forums or in private meetings, and for being vigilant and reporting things when they seem odd or out of place. More importantly, our students really do look out for one another, and that's a key piece of the incredible culture we are privileged to be a part of at SDA. In the end, I firmly believe that the best way to foster safety on any campus is to focus on the relationships between students, staff, and our community. It really, truly is the SDA way. I've been doing this for a while. There's a construction update, believe it or not. I think all site administrators are privileged to be able to talk about this as well. So just really quick, again, thanks to the support of Prop AA, SDA just broke ground on the new Arts and Humanities Building, which will be located on the southeast corner of our campus. That is a 33-classroom building. My understanding is going to be the second largest building in our district, and should be ready in the fall of 2019. So looking forward to occupying that space and celebrating all that comes with that, and then just, you know, kind of letting it go and occupying it. So really excited about that. So then, and then just kind of to wrap some things up here real quick, please allow me to quickly acknowledge the work of our mainly new but seasoned administrative team at SDA this year. So with three new administrators to SDA, including myself, and our second-year veteran, I couldn't be more pleased with the positive impact we have had on our students, staff, and our community. It's rare to have that much administrative turnover in 1 year, and we knew that in itself would be a bit of a challenge. So I'd like to thank SDA Assistant Principals Ms. Katie Bendix, Dr. Celeste Abnanalbi, and soon-to-be Dr. Bobby Coy for their passion, dedication, and commitment and service to SDA and its learning community. And so, and just in closing, again, I want to thank you, our board, for your leadership, your dedication, and your support for kids. We're blessed with the prudent and forward planning of our board and district leadership, and I feel honored to work in an amazing district where we value students, their achievement, and certainly our community. So, thank you.
Right. Questions for Mr. Clutcher?
Yeah, you know, I sent you the link, I think, to the UCSD Launchpad. If you had a chance to get involved in that, where it's like Shark Tank, but it's at UCSD, and they get the product, and finally they get to sell the end. Were you able to hook up with them?
Yeah, you know what? I'm working through our business CTE teacher, okay. Mr. Ole Norris, on that. Okay. So I will check back in with him on some progress. But there is some movement with several entities in the county, for sure. I do. In fact, our kids have talked about that experience.
Yeah, it's a great program. Yeah. And, you know, from there.
And I met with that team. I did.
Right. They're great. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Yeah. Love that opportunity. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. We have an update from our Special Ed Task Force by Mark Miller.
Excellent. Good evening, board and community members. I'm proud to give an update on the work thus far with our Special Education Task Force. So the group has met 7 times, most recently meeting yesterday at Pacific Trails Middle School, and we have a couple of members of the task force in the audience tonight. And I want to personally thank them for their participation throughout this process, which has included classroom visits, data reviews, best practices, surveys, and what I'm most proud about is thorough, respectful, and deep conversations throughout the process around special education and what a continuum of services would look like within the San Ygito Union High School District. As I mentioned in my previous update, the group has adopted a model that our administrators and teachers are familiar with, which is our single plan for student achievement. With this adoption, this means our document will be data-driven, will be reviewed annually, and more importantly, will also be aligned with our LCAP. In our last 2 meetings, the group has begun to draft the strategic plan, coming to consensus on common goal areas. The tentative topics for overarching goals include communication, transitions, curriculum and instruction, professional development, and meaningful student inclusion. Our next steps will be to finalize these goals and to create action steps, and at our next meeting on April 18th here at the district office, the entire time will be spent on writing the plan to keep us on target to present to the board in June.
Are the parents here? You said they're on the task force.
Yes.
Who are they?
Mrs. Chafee's here.
Oh, Sophie, hi. Thanks.
And we also have a teacher in the audience.
Oh, good.
I don't want to put him on the spot. But
thanks for coming. And thank you for your report. I've been able to attend at least part of 3, I think, of those meetings, and it has been good to hear the conversation. And I know there's been other board members present at other dates, but thank you for that update. And that brings us to our public comments. We have several, and I'm not certain, but if you find that you're on the same topic as someone else and that what someone else has said before you kind of meets the same points you want to make, feel free to just affirm that. And you don't have to use 3 minutes, but we will have a clock running, and I will call you up one at a time. So first I have Nicholas Birchfield. You would come to the podium.
Well, I won't take much time at all. Oh. My name is Nick Birchfield, and I'm the new executive director for the Torrey Pines High School Foundation. That's so I simply wanted to come here, meet you all, thank you guys for your tremendous work, and just tell you how excited I am to work with you all. And that's it. I know we got a lot of stuff to do. It's all the long, the important stuff, but I'm really excited to be here and be part of the family. Thank you so much.
Started,
thanks for coming.
You started this week?
I am in the middle of my second week, so I got it all figured out.
He just showed up for the party.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sophie Chaffee, please.
Hi, I'm Sophie Chaffee, and I'm a parent. And I wanted to also thank the district for the way they handled the protests on Tuesday and the way they listened to the voices of the students. And in the spirit of also amplifying the voices of students, I have two suggestions for you. Number one is to appoint a student rep, like you fine people, from the Adult Transition Program. Mm-hmm. Number two is picking up on a topic that I read about in the SDA Mustang about the SDA Student Forum, that the current online health course wasn't really sufficient and should be looked at for improvement. And I wanted to say that those sentiments are shared by a lot of special education parents, especially in light of there was an NPR report about the hidden epidemic of sexual abuse of the disabled. And I think that we really could do better in our health and sex ed curriculum. And as you're going forward and looking at curriculum in the future and instructional materials specifically, I recommend you do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming this evening.
Andrew Garcia, please.
Good evening. Just wanted to stop by and lend some support to SDA's athletic program. We've had a lot of success, which Gabby has mentioned, this girls' CIF basketball program, or CIF win this year and for basketball. And I'm actually have a kind of unique perspective. I've been a coach there for 4 years, started out as a head JV basketball coach in the boys' program. Now I'm assistant coach Jason Stewart on varsity. My daughter's a junior there. She was part of that basketball program success. And just want to lend some support to the boys' basketball program in particular, Coach Stewart. He's meant a lot to the high school. He's meant a lot to a lot of young men in the community. I can tell you that what he's building there is pretty unique because basketball is probably down a few notches. He's trying to raise young men, trying to teach them how to be student-athletes, you know, being a good student is first. And the type of atmosphere he's building there, you know, the basis is that he wants to be able to bring family members and young men into the program. Similar to my son, who's in seventh grade, he's been coming around to practices since he's been in fourth and fifth grade. It's a family, and these 16, 17, 18-year-old kids that are growing up treat him like one of theirs. So just want to say he's doing a great job. It's a great environment, and just supporting him.
Thank you for coming out this evening. Darren Terry, is it? Thank you.
Walk fast.
did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
Your time starts when you start talking. Don't worry.
Just wave it down. So I'm also here to just lend some comments about the SDA athletic program. You know, my background, former coach for basketball, still doing player development, and my son is a freshman there. One of the main reasons we actually picked the school was because of Jason Stewart. And the team that he's put together, and as the product of two teachers from Detroit, I understand what the impact of good teachers and mentors means. And so I spent a lot of time around the program from summer camps from the 7th, 8th grade all the way up through high school. I'm a fairly active volunteer. I get to do film and sometimes get to do stats. And my experience with Jason throughout all of this has been extremely positive. Teaching the right life lessons, learning the, you know, what hard work and discipline mean, patience and persistence in the face of failure, and I think those are important lessons. And so I really echo the sentiments that were mentioned earlier about just what he's trying to build and building a culture of teamwork, hard work, dedication, and things like that. And before we actually decided, I did a lot of research about where we should go, LCC, Torrey, and all that. And I consistently got feedback that said, hey, you're lucky. Jason's really good. And I said, well, why is that? Don't you know who he is? NCAA champion. has great coaching success at the club level. I'm like, well, that's great, but what does that mean for the high school program? And I'm like, he's going to bring the same thing there. Got to know him a little bit better. He knows the game. And I think for me, the one thing that I look for my son to be around is someone who can actually, first of all, is competent, right? So he has the background. I think the second thing for me was really, you know, can he build a great team? And it's not the basketball team. It's actually the team of coaches around him. And all of them, to a T, are phenomenal with the kids, how they treat them, how they build them up. And I think, you know, the third thing would really be around, you know, is he able to set the right direction for the program and communicate that and be consistent throughout the program with the teachers or with the parents and also with the kids. And I think he's done an incredible job. But really the fourth thing for me is he doing it the right way? Is he trying to drive results and build a program and build a team and teach kids life lessons the right way? And I can't say enough about how well he's done that. My kid personally loves him, and I just wanted to lend my comments and thoughts in support of the program and the importance of that program at the school, and also how well Jason and his team and the team that he put together is actually doing. And if there's extra money, please build a new gym.
Thank you. Right. So I'm going to apologize because I'm not sure if I said the name right the first time, but I'm going to say it again now for Pamela. Terry, is it?
Hi, I'm Pamela Theory, and I want to thank the board, and I just wanted to submit some comments and suggestions for you to consider. I believe that we have a systemic issue in our community that can fuel discourse with high school athletic coaches, and I'd like you to consider this in the future if you receive any type of harsh feedback about any of our coaches or coaching staff at any of our wonderful high schools. We have a lot of private coaches in our community, and parents send their kids to these private coaches for weight training, plyometrics, speed and agility, and these coaches build their businesses now most often on social media. And very specific to the athlete's name, the athlete's photo. And these kids are dying for this attention and to be tweeted out on Instagram as a fantastic athlete trained by this private coach. These coaches are heavily invested in the athletes that come to them in their pay-for training to be starting athletes in their sports. That puts a lot of pressure on the athlete and also on the parent that's paying the fee. These coaches will build up a family, parents, their children, and tell them what position they should be playing, that they should be starting, because it builds their value proposition. Okay? And that creates a really hard conflict of interest. It can really create discourse between the families and a coach and make a student feel like they're not earning the role, that my private coach is telling me one thing, my high school coach is telling me something else. It should also be noted that some of these private coaches have applied for coaching positions in our district and have been unsuccessful at getting those positions. And may not have the background and expertise to be an actual high school coach. We can't change these circumstances or the inherent conflict of interest, but I just wanted to submit to the board that this is out there, it exists, it's rampant, and if we ever do an investigation on a coach, it's something that should be considered, and it should also be something that we talk with our coaches about and support them, because our students are having a hard time with balancing that. So I thank you for listening.
Thank you for coming.
Okay.
Okay, next is Robert Gann, and if Jody, is it Sladovic, wants to be ready, he'll be the next speaker.
I just very quickly wanted to likewise congratulate the board and congratulate the district for supporting athletics, and have seen the success of San Diego Academy. I'd like to thank Principal Camacho and Scott Jordan, the athletic director. And I would encourage the board to continue to support athletics and to support coaches like Coach Stewart, who is building a program that promotes teamwork, you know, hard work, grit, things that I think we want all of our students to have and possess in their lives. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So Jody Sladovic, and then it'll be Justin Sladovic.
Hi, thank you guys so much for having me here today. I do want to echo some of the comments that some of the other folks have said, so I apologize if I'm redundant at all, but this is really, really important to me, and it's important to my family, so it's important for me to stand up here and also lend my support to the basketball program at SDA. For our family, my son Kobe is a freshman at SDA. And it happened to be that all of his friends, when they were all making the decisions about what high school to go to, he had a really tough decision to make because all of his friends that he's been going to school since kindergarten chose to go to LCC. But when it came down to it and he weighed the pros versus the cons, he chose to go to SDA because of Jason Stewart and the program that he's put together at SDA. And we knew as parents that it was a very hard decision for him, but we were so proud of him, and we continue to be so proud of that decision because we see everything that Jason has put into the program. We see the time and dedication that he gives my son and the other kids that are in the program. And it is almost an extension. I see it as almost an extension of all the hard work that my husband and I put into raising our son. In what Jason's doing for our son, because for me, it's not about basketball, really. I mean, I want him to play basketball, but I want him to be around inspirational people that teach you when times are tough, you stand back up and you keep fighting for what you want. And I think that our son has completely got that out of the experience in working with Jason personally and all the coaches that he's put in the program. So I don't want to take too much time because I know we have a lot to get through, but it's just really important that I lend my support to the program and Jason in particular.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And Justin, Sladovic, what she said. Okay, beautiful. All right, well, thank you all for coming and speaking this evening, and we will move on to our consent agenda items. So, let's see, I've got my list of pulled items. Shall we look first at then items 11 through 15? We've pulled out all the others. Do we need any
so it'd be
presentation, or can I just go ahead and go?
No.
If there's no other questions, 11 through 15 minus 11B, 15A, 2 and 3, and 15B, 3. And I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Thank you. Second, please.
Second.
Thank you, and it's a roll.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Gabby Gleaner.
Yes.
Sarah Trigg.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. And we're going to have several roll calls because any of these that we pulled out, we now have to vote on individually this way. So item 11B, did we have a...
No, that was Mr. Salazar.
Oh, that was me.
Oh, Mrs. Muir.
My question for you is, okay, so we've got the two... I'm on the field trips, mm-hmm. 11B, is we've got the Torrey Pines Advanced Journalism class going to San Francisco, but we only have one chaperone going for 32 kids.
Correct. And so, still don't know why my microphone's not working, I'm sorry. This is a trip that's gone with this particular advisor for at least 15 years. This has been roughly the ratio that she's taken all over the country. This year it happens to be in San Francisco, but she's taken them to Texas and Missouri and other states. She has a very thorough code of conduct for students on that trip, and it's a very active conference, and so kids keep busy during that period of time. I spoke with Mr. Copo about speaking with the advisor and seeing if she can get an additional parent to go with her on that trip so that we would have at least one other adult on the trip. But, you know, I would say that 1 to 30 is about the max that we look at. But we've had athletic trips and other academic competitions such as speech and debate where we've got a lot of kids and very few advisors or coaches that go on those trips. So I think that the principal is comfortable with this. Dr. Groves also reviewed this and has experience with overseeing academic tournaments himself. And so we do feel comfortable with this, but we are going to see if we can get an additional parent to go on that trip.
Now, why didn't she have a parent earlier? Because I had heard that she did not want a parent and she didn't want any parents to go.
I don't know if she wouldn't want them to go. As a matter of fact, in speaking with Mr. Coppo, he said it wasn't any intentional oversight. It was just she was running the trip like she's normally
done it.
Yes.
Now, do we have a board policy about a field trip like this, going on a plane to a faraway city where we don't you think we should have a policy where we have a ratio of adults to students?
What we have is a goal, and so it's not a hard cap, but what we say is the goal is 1 to 20. So this is over the goal, but it's not a hard cap that there must be X number of chaperones per student.
Right. Now, so this is on here for us to approve. So we, by voting yes on this, then we would be saying that we think that's an acceptable level, 1 to 32. I personally don't think that is, particularly in this day and age, particularly going to San Francisco. And I was contacted by a parent about this who didn't feel that parents were welcome. And so I'm happy to hear that she is going to allow parents to come. So that would be great. I've been on, not this particular field trip,
sure,
but my daughter was in cheerleading and went to on a bus to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd say we had almost as many parents as we have students. So I know this community, if offered and if encouraged, parents would step up. They love opportunities to hang out with their kids. So I really think we should take a stronger look at this. I'm uncomfortable in saying yes to this, and so, I'm going to vote probably on that.
I was just going to say my daughter actually was on your book, and Ms. Smith was her advisor, and so she actually went on a number of these. She was on your book, so the yearbook component of that. I would agree that is a large number. My daughter's experience many years ago was fine, and they are a very competent adult acting group of students, usually very serious about their journalism activities, and it does keep them very busy, but I certainly would welcome if there would be more adults participating, but my experience has been it's been.
I'd like to say I think it's interesting that so many of us noticed it this time, because I sent an email Monday or Tuesday to Mr. Dill with the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought that I looked at these continuously.
Yeah.
I've usually asked more about how many days they're missing, I guess. So maybe we do have some future conversation about our policy and our caps and our comfort level on that. And we can still have some more discussion. But if we want to look, maybe
there's actually one other trip on there as well.
Right.
That's a one to thirty. This particular trip occurs on April 12th, which is before your next meeting. So how about if we would propose, if you would approve it with the provision that we find an additional adult, and I'll work with Mr. Coppo to make sure that we get an extra adult, and I'll see if I'm doing anything on April 12th through 15th, because maybe I'll do it, but if we can't find anyone else. But I'm certain, as Mr. Salazar points out, that there would be a parent who would be interested in attending as well.
I want to make a motion to have, or you said it's not hard and fast, I want to make sure it's a rule.
I'll have to bring back a board, I would have to bring back a revision to the policy on that, since that's not an action item tonight, we wouldn't be able to vote on that,
right,
but I can bring back a revision.
That be brought back, and I think make sure there's always a second person if it's over 20.
Okay.
It's unacceptable.
All right, so may I have a motion for item 11B with the...
I have one other question about the... I know that they're just driving the choir, but once again, we got 1 to 30. Is there any parents going on that trip with the CCA Foundation in there? About number 5?
Yeah, the choir one. I don't know, Dr. Grove, if you happen to have any info on that.
Are there any parents going on that?
It's 1 to 30, I would and the, yeah. the one is definitely a district employee because they can't go on a trip without right. a district employee. Whether they have recruited, I mean, they submit these field trips, and it could have been submitted, you know, 3 weeks ago, and they may right. have recruited new parents since they submitted the form. So I haven't spoken to them specifically about that, so I don't know.
Yeah, that one's down the line. That was in May, so we've got time to
sort that out. Find out and let them ask them to get a parent to go on that too to put that provisional.
Okay.
Okay. And from now on, the resolution there is make sure that if there's bad that we call back and make sure that there's someone else going.
Okay. That, and that was part of my question is whether the principals knew what was was happening that maybe we aren't seeing. Right. But yes, I agree.
So I have a question. Who does that go to? It doesn't go to the principal before it comes here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the principal.
Principal first. Yeah. They sign off and approve it, and it comes to my office. If it is not an overnight, not a out of state, then I approve it. It doesn't have to come to the board. If it is out of state or overnight, then it has to come to the board.
So you can let the principals know that this is not something that
we're comfortable
that we're going to change. We're not comfortable with this, and we want to change this, and make sure if it comes to them, maybe we can take care of it that way.
I think it's a good conversation to have. I can tell you that, you know, I think there are good arguments to be made not to have a hard cap, and you know we can discuss that when you know when it's.
These are minors, though, and
I understand. And I spent 10 years traveling 30 weekends a year with students doing speech and debate. Sometimes traveling myself with 70 students by myself.
And there is a price tag to it too.
Well, parents who say they're going to go bail out the week, you know, 2 days before. And you either cancel the trip and the kids don't go and you lose thousands of dollars on lodging, transportation, registration fees, all of those things, or you... So I would be careful about a hard cap. You may not go if...
Well,
I think there are processes we can put in place to make sure that, you know, that... And again, a vast, vast majority of our field trips fall within the board's goal of 20 to 1.
Right. Yes. But Mike, so you can't put a price on safety. And on top of that, we have emails now. You email out people.
Well, I think what we need to do is vote on these items, and then we'll bring it back for discussion as a policy conversation. So.
So phrase it again. So we have.
That's what I was going to say. So are we
two provisional?
Two of them provisionally. Is that how we're comfortable with? So. Item 11B, I'm seeking a motion to accept the field trips with the provision that we find chaperones for those two.
An additional chaperone,
for each of those.
And are we making contingent on you, Ms.? Are you going, Mr. Hill,
for you?
Hey, if somebody has to, maybe it'll be Dr. Grove. He did it for 10 years.
He's cold handed.
We will find somebody.
I'm sure
we will find somebody.
Just ask the parents,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is during spring break, you're right.
So much
second.
All right, roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Gabby Gleaner.
Yes.
Sarah Traig.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. All right. 15A2, I believe, is pulled.
That is,
I pulled three.
I pulled
two.
A2. I'll just be real brief on this. The only reason I pulled this is I have a very close relative who works at Microsoft, so I want to abstain. And the other thing is I want to point out to you, Mr. Dill, is at the next meeting we're going to discuss possibly having cameras in here or what have you. Microsoft does, and I'm not, you know, shill for them, but I'm just saying if this, whoever is involved in this endpoint technology, somebody... whoever's dealing with them could talk to them. Microsoft does have a product, I believe, called Teams, which I don't think it's too expensive. It's a software that would enable all of us and everybody who has a computer here to be part of filming our meetings live so people at home could see them and then it could be saved forever. And I know Mrs. Hergesheimer has said if we do that, maybe we have a problem with transcribing. It also transcribes at the same time, like live. Like boom,
okay,
boom.
Well, let's go ahead and stay with the point.
So, yeah, my point is if you talk to whoever this is, I'm going to abstain there is that product.
Okay.
Okay, thank
you. We have a motion for item 15A2.
Move approval.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Gabby Gleaner.
Yes.
Sarah Trigg.
Yep.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Item 15A3.
Yes.
Mrs. Muir, of course.
I just told this. Is that I've gotten some complaints about them. Mike, why are we going with them? Right? That seems like a pricey for someone who's just doing analysis and doing what exactly are they doing? And why did you choose them?
So, it wasn't me solely. She's a wide variety of parts of our district utilize mm-hmm. this contract. And so they essentially provide us with access to research expertise as well as capacity in terms of staff capacity that we don't have internally. We don't have internal statisticians who can do analysis for us. We don't mm-hmm. have survey writing experts in-house. We don't have research, some of this research capacity. And then also it provides us access to every research study they do for all of their clients. We have access to all of their existing research as well. Without access to it, we would either make important decisions on our practices, policies, programs, absent research and absent information, or we would need to hire staff to do that research for us.
So how many surveys did they do?
How many surveys?
Yeah.
And I might point out, this is a 3-year contract.
Right. But how many did they do this year, let's just say?
Well, they do our annual LCAP survey. They did mm-hmm. the special education survey for us. They did a survey specifically for English language learners, but they also did focus group and interviews related to our English learner program. I think those were the survey.
So they did 5 surveys.
Well, and so, again, they don't just do surveys. We will give them a task, like, can you provide us with what does the research say about the educational research are out there. They do meta-analysis of research studies around what are best practices for math intervention at the middle school and high school level. They go out, access research, summarize it for us, and provide recommendations. So
that affects staff development, you're saying?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Did we put this out a bit, contract out a bit?
I don't believe we put it out a bit.
No,
but
it's
a... Did you take RFP off of this?
No. This is a professional service, so it's different from something that we would do bid for, like, widgets and products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I'm glad Mrs. Muir pulled this is I've gotten some contact from our taxpayers regarding this, and they were very unhappy. They said that they had registered a number of complaints with this company when they did a special education survey. They said that the questions were very poorly written, mm-hmm. that they weren't consulted or even spoken to about it, and that the data was totally skewed because anybody could have voted 10 times, not voted, but participated in the survey multiple times. And this isn't just recent. I mean, they sent all of us these complaints going back to mm-hmm. December. So the question is why wouldn't we... Did you consider it other companies? Are there other companies?
If I could speak for a moment, one of the special ed meetings that I was at, I can't recall if any of the board members were there, but it was raised there, and you're right, we had gotten emails, and I felt that it was answered pretty thoroughly in terms of we did want to hear from all parents, not just special ed parents, mm-hmm. and the questions took you different places depending on what your responses were. So if you were a special ed parent, it took... And I felt like the questions that were answered or were asked by the parents that had felt unhappy with it were at least to my satisfaction answered, that it was asking the questions the district wanted information.
Yeah, but what about letting people do the survey more than once?
So they have folks that work there that are skilled and trained in survey analysis, and so they have a threshold for which they don't allow certain responses, and so their responses are actually built in to account for errors. So there's a margin of error that's there than the survey.
And the only way to prevent someone doing that is to make it to have identifiable information. So when you're creating the survey, if you request information so it is no longer anonymous, that allows you to prevent people from taking it twice.
That's true.
But then you run the risk of bias and people not taking the survey out of that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That's
so again, it's more than just the survey component. It is the research that's informing our professional development and also curriculum strategies as well, instructional strategies as well that they're doing. And I know that Mr. Miller and Dr. Grove, they prepared a document I shared with you yesterday that went through the number of different areas that they provided services for us in addition to just the surveys.
I'm just surprised.
To answer your question about why Hanover. So they have essentially three pieces to their business. One is corporate research, one is health services, and healthcare services, and they have an entire team dedicated solely to K-12 education. Mm-hmm. And so there are many research companies out there with whom we could contract, but very few of them have an education team, and that lends some expertise, and it also gives us access because their education team is pretty active, and so they contract with districts all over the state and all over the nation. And every study that they do for every school district, we get access to. So their library of education research is pretty wide. And so anytime there's something, when we're facing an issue around, I want to know more about how do we, if we're looking at wellness, if we're looking at safety, we can access their library and go in and see what research exists so that we're not commissioning them to do research that they've already done. And so I would say that I see as one of the benefits of Hanover is that they have both the expertise in education as well as the library of research versus a more traditional kind of higher ed or research company.
And as far as you're concerned, there are no other companies that do education research?
Oh, I think there are other companies who have education.
It isn't always good to just always get another bid. I always, in my personal life, if I have a contractor doing something, I get more than one. You don't think that was necessary?
Well, I will say that Ms. Goldberg reached out to another company who actually contacted us, and she's the one that runs our LCAP process. And in her conversation with them, she felt that this product was much far superior than the other company that she met.
But you didn't walk to RFP.
Yep.
How long have you been in contact with them?
With Hanover?
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is our third year with Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
Current year.
Mm-hmm. It's not time to go out and work further.
And we might also ask if you've been satisfied with the services, then don't always go look for someone different.
Well, how would you know? They've only talked to one other company.
We've talked to a different company. But the issue with professional services is sometimes not apples to apples. Mm-hmm. It's not straight up like if you're just looking at, nuts and bolts, or tortillas and 12-inch tortillas, we can do a bid for that. With the professional service, it's the depth of their knowledge and the services that they offer and the software packages, et cetera.
Okay. And a question, are they adaptive if we have some concerns or want something that's surveyed you very differently or handled differently? Have they been willing to adjust?
They've been a really good partner with us. Mm-hmm. They don't design the research. They ask us, what is it that you're looking to do, mm-hmm. and what are you looking to learn, and then they come back with a proposal. We read that proposal. We say, that kind of hits it, but we want to look at this or that, and they provide input as to, okay, well, we could redesign our project based on X, Y, and Z.
I guess I'm just asking, Mike, because we're running a huge deficit. We've got to make sure we're using our money wisely.
Sure.
I'd like to ask if I could get a motion to approve item 15A3 on the table, please.
So moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, the questions have been answered as nearly as I can tell. I'm going to call for a roll call.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Gabby Gleaner.
Yes.
Sarah Trigg.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
No.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
No.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. That carries, and that brings us to item 15B3.
speaker slip.
Oh, we have a speaker slip for that. Beth Westbrook.
Hi, I'm talking about this transportation issue here because my questions for the budget was too long, so I timed it. So I just have a question. So we've seen in transportation a cut for our athletic teams, that some teams have buses and some don't, and you have the foundations asking for transportation fees and then you're not providing transportation. In addition, doesn't board policy state that all transportation will be provided by the district? And it also was told, I was told at the parent meeting that kids were not allowed to drive themselves to events, that parents had to drive them. So did you change that? Does that policy change? So I did notice a couple things, so I'm not sure what's going on. I did notice that you reduced your transportation revenues, so I'm wondering if you made a cut to transportation because of that. I received an email from our team liaison today stating that two bus companies closed, so that's why we have no buses. And that, I find that kind of odd. And then on the board packet, it says the two bus companies merged. And so my question is, you know, what's going on? Can you confirm that the lack of buses is not because of reduced foundation contributions or mid-year cuts to the budget?
Mrs. Douglas, if you want to take that. And
sure.
Yeah.
So the reduction in revenue that you're seeing is because the transportation donations have decreased. From the foundation, so there has been no mid-year cut to transportation. We do have a transportation issue. We sent out a letter, if you will, via email to the athletic directors. They were sending that out to parents. So we, as a district, have four designated buses for any extracurricular activities within the district. The other buses are used for special ed transportation or home-to-school transportation. Anything outside of the four buses that we have for extracurricular activities, we have to contract out with other private transportation companies. Unfortunately, the demand is more than what they can handle within the county, within the state. We've had several conversations here in the board meeting, in board meetings about that. What Ms. Westberg is referring to in the sense of the two companies that we did have. We went out to bid for transportation at the beginning of the year. Two of our approved bidders in terms of the contractors closed for business, so that's two less companies that we have access to. The item on the agenda that she's referring to, there was a merger, and this is just changing of who we're doing business with because there was a merger. Fortunately, we were able to negotiate the rates that we had with the previous company because they were coming to us telling us that they wanted to increase our prices. So at least they honored our contract with the other agency. We have local school districts that have reached out to us asking if we can help them with their transportation. We can't. I just got word a few hours ago, actually, that we were able to identify two additional outside bus contractors that we're going to be able to use for transportation. Unfortunately, because they aren't approved vendors from our bid, we can only do up to $10,000 worth of services with each vendor. So we're still out looking for some short-term solutions. In the meantime, there's not a lot we can do. We're trying our hardest to get as much additional transportation as we can. What we've had recently is we have vendors who say yes, we'll provide you with the transportation, and then we get a cancellation because they have a bigger event that will make them more money. And so that's been our most recent issue. We're on wait list for events that we do have, so if there is an opening, they'll call us, but we're not the only people on wait lists either, so it's a problem.
We have buses. Why don't we take these bus drivers and make them full-time? Why don't we...
Well, many of them are almost there already, and even they're still running school special ed transportation, and we are still doing some others, but we just don't have enough bus drivers.
Yeah, they're
even if we run them full-time, they're still overlapping with time frames that our other current bus drivers will have to run for extracurricular.
Right. So at the same time that that teams are trying to leave school to go to games, those bus drivers are in home-to-school transportation. So they can't be redeployed at that time.
So the kids are driving to the events now?
So we've had to relax that and in an effort. And believe me, we don't feel good about this. But we're not going to forfeit games because of this issue that's just recently popped up. and it is a crisis. And Mrs. Douglas and Mr. Love have been working on this for the last 2 weeks because this is when it came to a head, was 2 weeks ago, and it's continuing through this week. We don't know if when we get through this month, if we just have a sudden surge and we'll be able to honor the rest of those spring trips. But we're, as you've said, they're trying to find other companies to fill the gaps that we suddenly have. And so, you know, we apologize to our parents for this, and we understand that, you know, we receive support from our foundations to help offset this cost. The reduction in the revenue is just realizing that there is a reduction in the revenue, but we didn't reduce the expenditure side of the budget because we're still attempting to provide the same amount of service.
So we're going to refund the parents?
We're going to be talking with our foundations about that because I understand that's going to be a demand from the foundation parents, particularly with the spring season, mm-hmm. That we've been unable to deliver what they thought they were contributing for. And so Tina already has that on her to-do list to contact the four executive directors of the foundations in order to start that conversation.
But they don't even have to contribute
Precisely. So we'd have to work out the logistics with that, and in many cases we haven't even received the revenue yet, so it might still be with the foundations, and so we have to have that conversation with them.
We are being told right now by contractors that we're calling to try and get transportation services for, that March is a very bad month because of March Madness and the chartering for that. There's a lot of conferences that happen in the month of March, so we're already being told that March is a tough month.
Right. Well, I'm going to hope that we can get some updates as we move forward, but ask for a motion to approve
this
Shore-Ride charter. If I could have a motion to approve 15B3, please.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Scott Dyer.
Yes.
Gabby Gleaner. Sarah Trigg.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Thank you. And that brings us to our action items. The first item being adoption of resolution to support student safety and prevent school violence, school and student safety update. So there's a couple of items under that heading.
Yeah, and we do have a number of speaker slips,
right.
So we can go through that, and then we'll give our update.
May I please leave?
Absolutely.
Certainly.
I'm sorry. By the way, you can.
By the way, you all can leave whenever you need to, so you never have to ask.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right. So again, we have several speaker slips. If you find that what you wanted to say has been covered, if you can minimize your comments, then we should be able to get everybody an opportunity to speak this evening. So Shelley Stevenson, if you would please come to the podium.
Thanks for having me, trustees, Superintendent Dell. In fact, my name is Shelley Stevenson. I'm a parent of a freshman at Torrey Pines High School, and I'm president of the foundation of Torrey Pines High School. I got lured into speaking on behalf of some of my other parents who didn't like public speaking, so they did their homework. Anyways, I want to thank you for your dedication to and your resolution for safety. I read it thoroughly, and it's a commitment, and it's that I appreciate you having. We at Torrey Pines Foundation have been pushing for video cameras on campus for about a year now. And we're very serious about it. It started just for the fact that we wanted students to feel safe on campus, in the parking lot, around the perimeter where the eucalyptus trees are. You know, we're the most open campus in the district, and we have the most access. So we joked in the beginning. We said we didn't even care if you turned them on. You know, just put some dummy cameras up there because that will get their attention. And so we're pushing and pushing, and we are pledging to support this, and we would like to give the data school, if necessary, to get this moving. And so I appreciate the efforts that I had a chance to talk to Eric today and the work that Tina's done, and I see that is coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. We can't have it fast enough, though. Mm-hmm. So that's what my parents are saying.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
We're ready. So, you know, I appreciate the planning that we're all doing in light of recent terrible events in Florida. We appreciate the district having a plan, you know, this plan to support student safety. We appreciate our high school and Rob Cobo and him working with his team to develop a plan. I appreciate the teachers attempting to have a plan, right? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do for student safety? And the students need a plan. They need to feel good about what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And what are they going to do? Because then they'll be comfortable and secure in their day, their happy days in high school, right? Best days of your life so far. And then families need a plan, you know, because they feel good about sending the kids to school. So I really challenge you to move forward and move swiftly with the video cameras. Cameras are everywhere. We've got cameras in here. Around, as soon as we walk out, there's a camera on the street. From McDonald's, our students are being watched everywhere but on high school campuses. And I want them to feel good about going into the bathroom and not worrying about something happening in the bathroom or at the edge of the perimeter of the school or anywhere. We want, our parents want more fencing. Doesn't mean we want to be fenced in.
Right.
But we would, I love some of the ideas. We want, we want you guys to consider creative ideas like dogs. Sniffing dogs. You know, sniffing dogs are sweet, but they're also going to, you know, sniff out things that aren't good. So
thank you very much. All right, Ava Lee. Four? She's here this evening. Oops.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi, my name's Ava Lee. I have reached out to Superintendent Dill and each of the school board members twice regarding the importance of suicide prevention awareness due to multiple attempts at my school, Canyon Crest Academy.
Yeah.
I would like to reiterate the importance of prevention by education. With our school having higher than average rates, I hope the board will reconsider how critical this is to our student body. Canyon Crest parents are unaware of the frequency of these occurrences and are deprived of the opportunity to have a conversation with their children. Parents need to know if their kids or their children's friends are subject to a potential tragedy. When my friend had an attempt this year, it affected not just her, but our whole peer group. Teenagers do not know how to wrap their heads around this. And with SDSUSD and Canyon Crest priding itself on being an award-winning district and school, which is one of the nation's finest districts, offering a wealth of academic and extracurricular opportunities in which its students can engage and excel. It also needs to be a front-runner in encompassing issues such as suicide prevention and students' emotional health. We are required to take physical education for physical health, but we are only receive 2 hours of suicide awareness. Life management and coping skills are equally important. The district is required to be transparent with issues such as whooping cough and head lice, yet families remain in the dark in a matter that can result in death. As a cutting-edge district with a higher-risk school, I would hope that this issue would be voluntarily rolled out prior to legislative mandates. I would like to thank Mrs. Muir, Mrs. Mrs. Dolores, Mrs. Herman, and Mr. Salazar, and especially our district social worker, Mika Caspasso, for their acknowledgement and concern. Since I have yet to receive a reply from Mr. Dill, as a leader of the student's best interest, when a student reaches out twice without acknowledgement, I hope to put my face with my email and reiterate the important this important plea for consideration.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Karen Abrams, and if Robin Ruderbush would be ready to come up behind her. Thank you.
Hi there. First, I want to acknowledge the kids or the students for doing the walkout yesterday. I think it's amazing that you participated in that. And I appreciate the board's support of them, even if it wasn't sanctioned. I'm here to talk about the hope that you guys will adopt a strongly worded gun violence prevention resolution act tonight under the guise of the school student safety bill. I would encourage you to work with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I know that the Encinitas Union School District in Port, they passed it two nights ago, and I hope you would do the same with strongly worded, much more strong words than what you currently have in your resolution. I also hope when you speak with Rocky Chavez in a few days, he's got an A rating from the NRA and that maybe he would listen as well. first and foremost, we should go on record as a board, you should, to put pressure on Congress. Congress needs to pass laws requiring criminal background checks on all gun sales, including at gun shows, like what's taking place this weekend at the Delmar Fairgrounds. Put pressure on Congress to enact a federal red flag law that is being increasingly adopted by states, including in Florida this past week, that empowers family members and law enforcement to petition a judge to temporarily block a person from having guns if they pose a danger to themselves or others. Prohibit bump stocks. Empower law enforcement. I see some of our law enforcement here. When criminals try to buy guns, and that would ensure that law enforcement officials are alerted when criminals break the law and try to buy guns. It would strengthen the background checks. Prohibit the sale of high-capacity magazines. Raise the minimum age to 21 years old for the purchase of semi-automatic rifles and shotguns. Prohibit all sales of assault weapons. And also, Congress must not push the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. Our congressman, current congressman, for at least a little while longer, Daryl Issa, voted for the Concealed Carry Act, as did many members of Congress. That should not be allowed here in the state of California. And last year, Congress must not push legislation that would put guns in our classrooms. As you probably all saw in the news, that a teacher accidentally discharged a gun during a gun safety lesson the other day up in Northern California and injured a student. All of these things are very easy to enact. There are a few more that can be done, things that could help keep our children safe. So again, I urge you to work with Moms Demand Action and work to make our children safe.
Thanks, Camille.
Thank you.
Robin Bush, and then it'll be Ben Westberg.
Hi, I'm Robin Ruderbush, and I'm the mom of a freshman at Canyon Crest. And he would be here with me, but he's making beignets for his French class. By the way, the walkout was fantastic. He said most of the kids in his class went out. So I don't know the specific numbers, but he said it was really great, very successful. So thank you. That was the first thing I wanted to say. You're probably aware that not all school districts were as supportive as this school district. And so it means a lot to me as a parent that you, while not taking responsibility for it, you let the kids know that it was okay to use their voices and practice their First Amendment rights. So that's super important. So thank you for being that kind of school district. I also really appreciate you putting on the agenda this resolution. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great start. But I'm just going to reiterate what Karen said. I would like to see a little bit stronger wording. I think, you know, you do a great job of leading up, talking about gun violence, but when you get into the be it resolved, it's a little soft. And I would like to see some more specific things, as Karen talked about. So I do have a copy of what she just read that I can share with you if you'd like it. It does come from Moms Demand Action. It was a release that they put out. It's all the specific legislation that they're working with nationally. This is also a copy of the San Diego Unified School District resolution. It's got some pretty strong wording in there as well. So feel free to. You may have it.
Thank you.
So my point is, I love what you're doing, but I think this is a great opportunity to be strong, use our voices, tell our legislatures, you know, and everybody, you know, this is serious, and we're talking about guns, and we want to keep our kids safe on campus. So I appreciate what you're doing, and I hope you'll continue to stand up for the kids. And thank you so much for Ava for speaking out.
Thank you. Beth Westberg, and she'll be followed by Rita McDonald, if you'll be ready to take the podium.
Hi, I'm going to talk about something just a little bit different, sexual harassment. When unwanted touching, comments, and our gestures are so bad or occur so often that it interferes with your schoolwork, makes you feel uncomfortable or unsafe at school, or prevents you from participating in or benefiting from a school program or activity, this is called hostile environment harassment. This harassment can be from your teacher, school officials, other students, school volunteers, or even someone visiting the school. So I'm wondering how a teacher that has 14 accusations of sexual misconduct is able to negotiate a resignation, no public record of discipline, a year's salary, and the ability to work in another district. It appears that this district is no better than the Catholic Church, which allowed priests to move from church to church, highlighting sexual assault. A commentator on the Voice of San Diego website noted, this is called passing the trash. When a teacher is accused of sexual misconduct and then is allowed to resign and move on to another school, that is passing the trash and far too common. I also don't understand how or why student behavior is held to a different standard than a staff member when it comes to sexual misconduct charges. If a student sexually harasses another student once, then the student is charged with a sexual harassment charge. I personally know three male teenagers that the district has charged with sexual harassment. They're nice kids. One was for leering. One was for making a gesture. He went like this. And one for sitting on the lap of a student that was sitting in a seat. Those students had immediate repercussions, such as suspension, mandatory sexual harassment classes, permanent notes in their files, and possibly noted on their transcript. Apparently, teachers and staff are allowed to continue this vile behavior towards many students over many years. Why aren't teachers held to the same zero-tolerance standard? This latest teacher has been doing this for years, Mr. Boyd from SDA. Everyone knew about it. The students, the parents, the community, the staff. But yet the district does nothing. When parents complain, the first response from staff is usually, oh, it's the first we've heard of it. Or, there's nothing we can do about it. Well, guess what? Time's up. We are holding you accountable for the actions of your employees. When will you start following your own procedures? That's what's all attached to your stuff. Or, of which you don't seem to even know. I even question whether your policies are appropriate. How many of these accusations were recorded by Rick Ayala, your Title IX officer? What does Mr. Ayala do to ensure that Title IX policies are followed? Is the district handling these cases correctly? And how is your staff trained? And don't tell me we can't do anything because of the teacher's contract. A teacher's contract cannot supersede or protect a person from the law. The district's teacher contract gives teachers the immediate and full protection of the law. The district doesn't give that to our students. The students don't receive the same protection. If there's a reason the teacher was able to resign and not be fired because of protections afforded by the teacher's contract, then I respectfully ask that you immediately open negotiations with the union and negotiate that sexual harassment and misconduct will not be tolerated and will comply with state and federal law. Staff should be held responsible and accountable for their actions, and I'd be shocked if the teacher union would continue to protect these sexual harassers. As you learned at the governance workshops, your priority is the students. So let's see that in action. Support the students and stop disrespecting the victims and hold the harassers accountable. We're going to hold you responsible for your actions or lack of. Next month, we expect to see a review of your sexual harassment policies, which I think were dated 1999, and a summary of the incidents reported to your Title IX rep for the last 5 years. There are other teachers in this district that do similar things to our kids. Everyone knows who they are. Clean your house, hold your employees accountable, stop blaming the victims.
Thank you. Good evening, Donald. If you'd please come to the podium, and she'll be followed by Stephen Bartram.
I'm here tonight to talk about the lack of sense of urgency that I see with respect to physical security at Torrey Pines, especially because that's where my son goes. It's a completely open campus. And for several years now, Mo and John have tried to get you folks to pass physical security in the budget, where we have fences, we have police officers, and we have video recording devices, cameras. It doesn't happen, and I just don't understand why. I don't understand, is it because Joyce and Amy and Beth no longer have children attending the district, so they no longer have skin in the game, so to speak? I really don't get why you guys are so anti-security. I hear constantly how much you care about the children. But, you know, my dad taught me something. Actions add integrity to your words. So it's instead of talk about caring, let's have some actions that show that you actually do care. because from where I sit, where my student sits, there's no caring because there's no action. Nothing has changed on that campus. It's wide open, and I'm sure other schools, I'm not familiar with other schools, but other schools have equal problems where they don't have an adequate security, physical security, and anything that happened at Parkland could happen in this district. And if it does happen in this district, Beth, Amy, and Joyce, you're responsible for it because you guys are not, you guys block Mo and John, from who want to do the right thing, from doing the right thing in regards to the budget. This needs to stop, now, and physical security needs to happen immediately. None of this I care stuff. Action. Action.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephen Borchardt, the last speaker on this topic.
Good evening. I'm Steve Borchardt. I'm really, really, really excited to be here this evening and speak on behalf of what the folks have been talking about. First of all, my little bona fides is I was in the Marine Corps for 20 years. I also taught in this school district. I taught in Rancho Buena Vista for about 18 years. And then while I was going to grad school, I had taught in all of your schools, in every one of them. Okay, except the one of the elementary schools. I did one summer. It was a great job. What I'm here to try to do is to reflect what you've all heard, and that is that I applaud your effort to do what you're doing relative to security here within the district. It's a wonderful plan. It's absolutely incredible that all the other districts don't have that kind of thing, and it's a good statement for you to make. I want you to know that you're not alone in your initiation of this step. And finally, the last part of that has to do with resolution. Currently, within the San Diego County, there are 19 schools who have passed that particular resolution or resolutions like that. There are an additional 12 other districts and organizations who are going to be on board with this thing. You are not alone, and you will join all of those others, and I hope that you would do so. The words we talk about in here about making it stronger, I totally support that. I have been the Gun Violence Prevention Coordinator at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship at San Diego for the last 5 years. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Brady Campaign and proud to be a member of MOBS. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for speaking this evening. Oh. Mr. Dell.
All right. You know, the events at Parkland and recent local events with threats in our schools, we understand that this affects and impacts our entire community, and it causes us all to consider how we can increase the security of our schools. We are going to have presentations from several individuals tonight who are going to talk about our efforts to support student well-being and ensure safety on campus. The things we're discussing tonight are not in reaction to the recent national events, but things that have been part of our ongoing planning. So you're going to hear some history in this and be part of this journey and where the next steps are. You are going to hear some timelines tonight on next steps, but after we give you some history on where we've been. And we're also going to have our law enforcement friends come up and speak for a few moments. But what we want to impress on folks that are here in the room, that going to San Diego schools is, and it's going to continue to be, safer than driving to a San Diego school. Campuses are the safest place for kids to be, and you know, as I've just mentioned, it's actually more dangerous to get into a car to drive to that school. But I'm not saying that to dismiss any of the emotion that occurs after an event like Parkland or the national outrage that occurs. So I want to reassure everyone here tonight that our efforts to support student wellness and well-being began long ago, and it's going to continue, and that we're going to start and we're going to end with focus on student wellness, because I think the prevention aspect is the thing that's most important for us and where our expertise lies. There are students out there that are struggling and they need help, and they will never commit an act of violence. But we can affect those kids, we can affect those families, and if we also get those students who are prone to committing an act of violence, we will have gone out there and have done the right thing. So with that, just to walk through how this is going to work tonight. We're going to start with Mr. Miller because he's going to talk about some of our student wellness initiatives. Then I'm going to ask our friends from the three police agencies that patrol our school district to come up and speak. Mrs. Douglas is going to talk about the physical security and our efforts over the last few months that began well before the Parkland incident to review the physical safety of our campuses and also our processes and procedures, where we are with that and where we're going. And then I'll clean it up and then after that point and talk about a few more things, and then we're going to end with Mr. Miller as well. So, Mr. Miller.
All right, thank you, and good evening again. So SDUHSD's LCAP, which was first adopted in the 2015-16 school year, includes a goal which focuses on social-emotional learning and the primary objective to increase the level of school connectedness and the sense of safety of pupils, staff, and parents. So over 3 years ago, this board adopted a plan which included that goal, which saw student connectedness and the safety of pupils as primary focus. This goal guides our work around creating a multi-tiered system of support to promote social-emotional learning. As a district, we strive to be proactive in our measures to support students, parents, and staff with wellness and to create safe and engaging and inclusive learning environments. As such, to promote social-emotional learning, we currently employ 31 counselors with pupil personnel service credentials. I say that because this PPS credential is important as it allows our counselors to not only provide college and career counseling, but also allows them to provide counseling around prevention and intervention strategies as well as social-emotional counseling services. Through the LCAP, we also employ 5 social workers whose primary responsibilities encompass working with site counseling and teaching staff in assisting with crisis intervention, working with students on developing emotional and social skills, behavioral modifications, as well as referral and developing support groups for students in need of assistance. They've also been instrumental in linking our parent community to outside resources and agencies. All of our site work with the site wellness teams, which includes students and some of our schools, which include parents, are to develop wellness weeks to promote healthy living and decision making while helping students build connections. Sites participate in Yellow Ribbon Weeks, which is suicide prevention, Red Ribbon Weeks, which used to be just for drug and alcohol prevention, which now encompasses overall student health, Green Ribbon Week, which includes mental health awareness, as well as Wellness Weeks. On the policy level, in the last couple of years, this board has adopted a bullying policy as well as a suicide prevention policy. Within the suicide prevention policy, which complies with AB 2246, it was developed to protect the health, safety, and welfare of our students in the school setting, ensuring adequate support for students, staff, and families affected by suicide attempts and loss. In this policy review, we have refined our threat assessment process, working in collaboration with our school staff and local law enforcement. Our website is updated to include these new policies, as well as other resources, and our staff has been trained on suicide prevention resources. While support hotlines are posted on our district website as well as our school website, starting next year, all of our student ID cards will have important crisis intervention numbers located on the back. In closing, to show the importance of wellness on a focus on our campus, as Mr. Camacho spoke to you tonight, half of our school principals who have made presentations to the board this year have focused and highlighted on student wellness and connectedness, which shows that they are dedicated to creating safe learning environments.
So I have something to ask. So Mark, when Ava contacted me, obviously I was very concerned. She was talking about the student, and I went on a website, and I couldn't find the numbers anywhere. And I had to reach out to San Diego Alliance to get in touch with Ava, because I was very concerned about that child. As you're talking about that now on the card, as I understand that, but is that a 24-hour number and on weekends?
Yes, they are. So if you go to CCA's website, it's actually on the main page. It says...
I couldn't find it, because I'm going to tell you something. I was very diligent looking for it, and then I contacted
it's up. It's up there now.
And
I just said
this is unacceptable when we've got a child that's in distress and looks like they're very serious about taking something. And another thing, I called Eric about this, is I went to the Solana Beach Library, and they had a support group there, and there was a lot of kids there who had committed suicide. It was very concerning for me being there. is that I think even we've got Solana Beach, our library there, is maybe we should put something there too, because kids are there on campus and our school is connected to that.
Okay. Thank you. And as we speak, Mo, I actually wrote down my email address as well as where this information on suicide prevention can be found on our website. And after this meeting, I was actually going to walk it over and hand it to Ava and her mom, so that if you need to reach out and want more information, I can provide that.
And if we could maybe let all the presentation get done before we start.
So I'd like to invite our representatives from the San Diego Police Department, the Carlsbad Police Department, and the San Diego Sheriff's Department to come up and speak and say that as they're making their way up here, you know, we live in a large community and we have three different police jurisdictions, but we have very good relationships with all of them. And that I meet with all three of those agencies regularly, and also they've been really good about coming to our area superintendent meetings. So the element, the K-6 superintendents and I all meet together, and we've had these three agencies come to us to meet with us, and that's above and beyond what they do every day in our schools. And so, you know, while we have three different law enforcement agencies, we're all unified, and we actually talk in those meetings together, and they support us every day in many different ways. With two of these gentlemen here, I've got their cell phone numbers, and they've got mine. And you know, Wes Albers, who you'll meet in a moment, he's called me at 11:30 at night with issues, and when I see Sergeant Albers call me, I always pick up the phone. And also the captain of the Sheriff's Department also has sometimes called me late at night to give me updates on things that are happening in the community. But they work with us not only on the criminal side of things, but also on the mental health support. And we'll hear from one of them. I told them they don't have to step on all of their points that they're going to make, but they also have the psychological emergency response teams that they work with through their departments when we have students who feel like they may be a danger to themselves, not just to others, and haven't committed a crime. We've got that law enforcement support as well, and they do a lot to help us with emergency planning. And so I'm going to turn it over to these three gentlemen, and they can give you just a quick few moments to talk about their commitment to the schools and how they work with us every day.
So I'm going to just step in the middle here so that I can bounce back and forth to all of you, because I think this is something that's touching everyone everywhere. I'm Wes Albers. I'm with San Diego Police. I'm a detective sergeant. I've been in charge of our juvenile unit up at Northwestern for 4 years now. I am invested in this. I'm toward the end of my career, and I'm old guy stroller club. So I got young kids, not in this district, but in a neighboring district. I have schools in four school districts I oversee. So when we talk about this, it's personal to me. It's not just something, it's not latitudes, people blowing smoke at you. First thing I did when I took over is I asked my officers to go to every one of our schools, and that includes your school district, and walk through and get me photos, get me maps, get me layouts, get me emergency contacts of everybody there. So if I can't call Eric in the middle of the night, I can call someone else. Not only did I do that, but I took photos of the insides of the schools. Because aside from managing our juvenile, I manage our hostage and crisis negotiations throughout the city of San Diego. So everything from a barricade with a hostage to a jumper on a bridge. So kudos to you, young lady. And if you want to talk, we can get some stuff in the school. I don't mind helping with you, because that's all a component of safety. The social-emotional is as important, the outreach, as is the physical structures and the cameras and the other things. There is no one thing that's going to make our school safe. It's a lot of different things. Another thing that we've been doing, and then I'll turn this over. So I belong to an association of threat assessment professionals. And one of the things that I've initiated and I've been doing with the district attorney's office with Summer Steffen's approval and that is we're looking at how we're going to wrap countywide. So from the county, we're going to look at all our school districts, all our schools. And how do we better marry up some of what the school procedures are with some of what our mental health procedures are, with some of what our law enforcement procedures are. So here, we're not missing these gaps where a lot of places are finding these gaps. And I have not seen more momentum in my 30 years of doing this than what I have seen since Parkland. So this has been going on for 4 years for me, but there's momentum now. We're listening. We hear you. You know, to that end, we'll keep doing it.
Thank you.
So I'm Ted Greenwald. I'm the field operations lieutenant for the North Coastal Station, so that covers Encinitas, Solana Beach, Del Mar, Rancho Santa Fe. And in this case, SDA and I think four other schools. Even though you see three different law enforcement agencies up here, we all go to the same law enforcement academy. We all have the same basic training. We all have the same radios. We all speak the same language. We all communicate with each other extremely, extremely well. When you see the cop shows and you see, you know, they always focus on Los Angeles. They always focus on New York because those hit the largest population for their production buck. But when you get right down to what goes on with actual law enforcement professionals doing the job, establishing best practices, the entire rest of the country looks to San Diego County. And that relates to how we deal with juvenile crime, that relates to how we deal with psychiatric emergency response team. And they're not all our ideas, but there are a lot of things that we take, we kind of twist them, tweak them, and we shape them so that we get the best possible result for our community. Things that we've kind of done over a lengthy period of time. I all the way back 1999, you have Columbine High School. The tactic nationwide at that point was surround and call out. So you surround the school, you wait for the SWAT team to come with all their bells and whistles and all their toys to come and save the day. Well, Columbine, they found out that didn't work. Very, very rapidly, every agency in San Diego County went to a more of a military tactic, realizing that sitting back and waiting was not an effective solution while somebody's in there actively shooting our children. And I say our children because they're all our kids. I don't live anywhere near this end of the county. Your kids are my kids. There's a reason why I'm here. My wife's an educator. When she's at work, those kids are her kids, and she's going to step up and do what she needs to do to protect her kids at her school. So every agency in every law enforcement agency in the county, every fire agency in the county has adopted a set of tactics where they work with us, and we take a very proactive approach to addressing school shooters. Santana High School, the initial response for that was the Sheriff's Department in the city of Santee. The three cops who went in there were a patrol deputy, a motor deputy got off of his motor, and an off-duty San Diego PD dad. 4 or 5 weeks later, Granite Hills High School in the city of El Cajon school resource officer was on scene, and there was a deputy sheriff who had picked up a kid and was returning that student to Granite Hills High School back to where he belonged. They were there to immediately address the threat. In the time since 2001 when those incidents happened, we've only gotten better. We've only gotten better communicating with each other. We kind of like the military, we sort of jab at each other and poke at each other, but when it comes down to actually doing the job, we communicate extremely well with each other. Like I said, we all speak the same language. At the end of the day, we want to make sure that you're comfortable, your kids are safe at school. Most recently, how long ago was Kelly?
2007.
Okay, so the incident at Kelly Elementary, Carlsbad PD, that was their baby. But there were cops from every agency in North Carolina that showed up to help out. So that's the kind of response you're going to get every single time something like that happens. A couple of the issues that came up, we've sort of touched on mental health a little bit. We've also, and one of the questions was, is that a 24/7 option? Something else that comes up, and while it's more focused toward crime as it's part of Crime Stoppers, there's a separate program called Students Speaking Out, and they actually have a separate website, studentspeakingout.org. But they have a 24/7 operator who answers all of the Crime Stoppers calls. We have a lot of schools. We have three different police agencies. We don't always know on your side of things who actually kind of owns that area. I can tell you within the last, was it 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. We had somebody at Torrey Pines or somebody who lived close to Torrey Pines kind of made some secondhand threatening statements, and they weren't actually like a threat. It was a kid having some mental issues. Well, within about 20 or 30 minutes after school hours, we had figured out that it was more appropriate for San Diego PD to actually address it because their school kid lives in their area, even though it came to the sheriff's department first. So I'm kind of beating a dead horse with this one, but we do a very good job in making sure we get the best, closest resource to where the issue is to try and get somebody help. So I'll leave this information with Ms. Schultz. As Wes was saying, you know, there are programs out there to get photographs inside schools and all that kind of stuff. And we actually have, in our modern, wonderful technical age, the San Diego Law Enforcement Coordination Center a few years back went through, and this district was one of the better ones to work with, and did what's basically called virtual walkthrough, just like you would see on a real estate website. And I was the sergeant for the unit doing it. We went through every single classroom. And, of course, classrooms change and school layouts change and, you know, there are construction projects, that kind of thing. So some of the information is going to be a little bit dated. But those photos are tied to the fire response plans that are put together by the fire department. And they're available to every law enforcement officer in San Diego County on the computer in their car. They can actually get access to that. So when we have, like, a protracted response, we show up, we deal with whatever the issue is, and now we actually have to go through the process of clearing the rest of the school. We've already got a pretty good idea of what the school looks like inside. Even if it's a cop from El Cajon PD or Chula Vista PD, they can pull up in front of your campus and pull up a map of where your student goes to school and what ought to be in that classroom, or at least, you know, oh, this is a science room. We might actually want to take a little more care in dealing with the lab rather than, you know, blowing the door off the hinges, that kind of thing. So law enforcement and the school districts have been communicating very well and very proactively for a number of years. So now I'll quit talking.
Thank you.
My name's Greg Crown. I'm a lieutenant with the Coral Bend Police Department. I'm a lieutenant in the detective division. So as of Monday, I switched over from general side, which has family services, which is in charge of all the SROs, school resource officers, to now I'm in charge of crimes of violence and our vice narcotic and our homeless outreach team and our crime suppression unit. So I'm kind of carrying the ball through to my partner who's going to take over, who's taking over for me on Monday. But as has been said, I'd just like to thank Ms. Field. The support that we got from the school district when we reached out was immediate. It was unequivocal. He's like, can I come to your office today and meet with you? And I was kind of shocked because usually it's, I'm busy, I don't have time for you. Absolutely had time for us. And that was what we wanted, because we cannot do this alone. We cannot do it with just the support of the school. We cannot do it with just support of the community. We need everybody to do it. We need the students. We need the parents. We need the teachers, the administrators. We need the everybody in the state, all of our legislators. We need everybody to work toward this, or it's not going to get solved. And it's not a quick fix. It's a long-term solution. It's a long-term, we're going to keep getting better. We got better after Columbine. I remember my training was totally different than it is now. You know, and I'd go home with simulation trainings, and I'd have actually visible wounds. And I got little ones. And my little one asked me, you know, why are you bleeding? I said, because I went through the door first. And I love the innocence of kids. He said, don't go through the door first. Why am I not listening to him? I said, well, somebody has to. He says, well, why does it have to be you? And that was a pretty big moment for me as a dad to say, you know, kids are smart. They realize, they get it. We need to get it too as parents and not focus on one area, but the whole thing. Somebody has to go through the door first, but it's a lot easier when you have a team with you. And we have a really good team. And that really good team is going to work toward getting solutions. So keep coming to meetings, keep our heads about us, and keep contributing to the solution, and we're going to get through this.
and we're going to do it positively. So once again, thank you for all your help.
Thank you for coming and for waiting. Thank you.
If you guys want to hang out in case the board has questions later, but we're going to move on to Mrs. Douglas, who will talk about where we are with upgrading our physical security.
So, first of all, I just want to say thank you to the board for the foresight in approving an agreement with the agency to come in and do the study on our hazardous vulnerability at our school sites. That took place in February prior to me getting here. Had it not been for that, my work would be very difficult right now. So you've made my life a little easier in the fact that we now have this report. So the gentleman that we selected that came in to do the assessment of our schools, he has 25 years experience with law enforcement, 8 years experience with school safety education. He was one of the founding members of the International School Safety Institute, which actually does training for law enforcement and school administrators on school safety. So we had someone come in and that did the assessment that had a vast breadth of knowledge. There was a lot involved since the time that he began the work in February. And so part of what he did was meet with district administration, met and had interviews at the school site, walked campuses. He talked with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, reviewed all of our current emergency operations plans, came up at night to see what our campuses look like at night in terms of perimeter security and things of that nature. So there was a lot of work involved looking at going out to the construction sites to see whether or not there was access there and how long it would take for somebody to come walk up to him and ask him who was he and why was he on the campus. So there was a lot involved in what the work that he did prior to providing us with information. As I said, he looked at all of our emergency operations plans, gave us feedback on that. There's a lot involved in that in terms of earthquake, fire, active assailant training, things of that nature. So there was no stone unturned, if you will, in the work that he's done for us. So the basically the feedback that we got in terms of different things that we need to do surrounding our campuses, a lot of it is behavior. There will be a big culture shift in how we view our campuses in terms of security and safety. There will not be convenience in terms of things that we've otherwise had on our campuses. It will be more around safety. And some of the things in relation to that is ensuring that we have people coming through the front office to make sure that they're checking in and getting a visitor badge. So we can clearly identify at any given point in time somebody who has not checked in so we can make sure that we know who's on our campuses. And a lot of that is behavior, and part of that is because we have different access points on our school campuses. And so there could be somebody who walks in and knows exactly where they're going and will head straight there without checking into the front office. We've gotten, in terms of staff here at the district office, whether it's maintenance, whether it's the bond office, facilities, even though we actually have district ID badges, we have made the determination to make sure that we're going into the front office and checking in to let them know that we're here. So even our facilities team, when they're bringing in a new construction person or somebody who's coming onto the campus, they actually walk the person into the front office, make them sign in, get a visitor badge, even though they're walking around with an employee. So a lot of it is going to be around behavior issues. Yes?
You know the badges. Do they have to make it sure it's they can see it? Because I think that should be a rule. The badge has to be somewhere on the person's head eye level so we can see they're on campus and they're supposed to be there.
Yes.
Because I've noticed that people, I don't ever see the badges. Maybe it's in their pocket or conveniently.
Correct. And that's the behavior piece that we're talking about. Because there are some times where somebody may walk on a campus, they're an employee, they're known, they don't even bother to wear the ID. And so those will be some of the behavioral changes that we're going to have to work on because a lot of us may not be used to doing that. So some of the other things that they've talked about is perimeter security. We've all had conversations around that. One point of entry in terms of a school grounds.
We've talked about, you've heard talk about cameras and surveillance. Mm-hmm. Those were some other things that were looked at. The badging in terms of visitors, updating protocols. Our emergency plans right now have more of a lockdown situation in it. What we haven't had is an update in terms of an active assailant, so run, hide, fight. We'll be incorporating all of that into our plans for the future. So in terms of a timeline and what is it that we're doing, we do have dollars that we have set aside for safety. They're not part of the general fund, so they are part of the facilities department, so they're in other funds outside of the general fund. But we have somewhere in the ballpark of about $1.5 million that we'll be able to use to help address some of these issues. So during the months of March and April, we actually are working with a contractor right now for perimeter fencing. We're working with architects for perimeter fencing at Torrey Pines High School and SDA. There will be an item coming to the April board for consideration in terms of what that might look like. So you'll see an item at the next board meeting in relation to that. The other thing we'll be doing during those months is we're going to have our maintenance department go out to the school sites and do some checks in terms of making sure that all doors are working properly, making sure that all gates are closing all the way properly. In some cases, the contractor realized that some of the gates weren't closing all the way. And so we're going to be going out during the next 2 months and making sure that everything is working in the way that it's supposed to be working, fixing any of those. We have our district safety committee meeting that's meeting next week. We're going to be vetting some options in terms of training for active assailant and vetting what might be a program that fits best within our culture. And so the district safety committee meeting will be making a determination on that so we can incorporate that. We also are currently looking at ID visitor management system. So currently right now, there's a process. You go in, it's pretty much paper. You sign your name in and get your sticky ID badge. The systems that we're looking at actually would require the visitor to scan their driver's license. It would print a sticky badge for you with a picture of your ID, basically, that it took. Clearly identifies that you're a visitor. It actually runs through a database to make sure that the visitors that are coming on campus are not sexual predators or things of that nature, so there'll be some checks in that regard. So that's going to be happening in terms of surveillance, because that was mentioned here tonight. So we have a team going up to Torrance next week who is looking at vendors, if you will. So one of the things, the biggest piece of work that has to be done around that is looking at the server, and the network and the things that we need technically for that. It's very simple to put camera up at that point, but it's the more complex piece and the harder piece is the server piece and figuring out all the connections so we have a fully functional, sustainable, district-wide system, if you will. So the team is going up to Torrance next week so they can look at the products and come up and develop a plan so that we can come back and start that work of we don't need to worry about going out for bid. The three vendors that we're looking at are actually part of a CMAS contract, so that's good. And once we have that in place, we'll be able to start with the piloting of cameras. So that will, in essence, be taking place during the month of March and April. In May and June, we'll be looking at updating all of our comprehensive school site plans. And at the May safety meeting, we'll be providing, based on the information we received from the hazardous vulnerability report. So from that point forward, we'll be bringing a new plan as a draft to the district safety committee meeting. And they'll be looking at that. And the hope is by the time they leave for the end of the school year, they'll be providing feedback so we can finalize that and get that set in place in time for the beginning of the school year for our first safety committee meeting. We'll also be looking at signage at the school sites so that it's very clear where people should be going to on campus. That'll be another thing. Building numbers so that it's consistent, easy for law enforcement agencies to know where each of our buildings are. Some of the newer buildings may or may not have identifiers on that, so that'll be another thing that we'll be adding to the list. Perimeter fencing, I told you that there will be something coming in April. At the June 21st meeting, we'll be coming with an update for proposed fencing plans at Torrey Pines and SDA and proposed schedule for construction. So that will be coming up at the June meeting. During July and August, we'll be finalizing our comprehensive safe school plans. We'll be installing all of the infrastructure, if you will, for the surveillance systems and for our visitor management system, the ID badging, things of that nature, with the notion of the first set of cameras that will be installed prior to the start of the school year. So we appreciate the support of the Torrey Pines Foundation because they would, are graciously putting their hands up and saying we would love to help donate. And so we'll be doing that first at Torrey Pines. They'll be our pilot school because then we'll want to make sure that everything is working properly the way that it should before we start rolling any additional ones out to any of the other school sites. And then kind of ongoing. So it's not obviously going to stop there. We're going to be working on ongoing training. We, in the district safety committee meeting, we've been asked to make sure that we have kind of a district-wide consistency across the board in terms of active assailant. And, you know, we've practiced fire drills to the T, and when was the last time we've had a fire drill? We'll continue to do that, but looking at some other ongoing training so that it's consistent across the board. We will continue to... what we're going to do new is incorporate some of the safety items in terms of an annual walkthrough at our school sites. Obviously, a school site, if they notice anything that needs to be addressed, it's a safety issue. We talked about it in a principal meeting today. When they submit work orders, they can put on their safety so we can easily identify things that need to be addressed right away because they always have the option. They don't have to wait for the walkthrough to come through. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to see is that maybe the kids can explain or elaborate on this is that have you reached out to the kids because they know the district and the school's the best? Can you go through and someone really doesn't know because they don't go to school there, but yet the kids will say, I know this is a problem, this access problem. I mean, Scott, I mean, you're on campus. You probably see things and think, hey,
where do you go to hide?
I think you reach out to the ASD and just say, you know what, have them come into a focus group is that maybe you don't know, but this is a problem. Because I'm afraid to oversee something and miss something because we're not using people that actually use it for our facilities.
We haven't done that at the district level. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether or not you guys are involved at your school site level. Are you
involved
there?
We've talked not really about any like physical safety. We talked about, obviously, our comprehensive plans. But
right.
Nothing on like the regards of like fencing, perimeter stuff, cameras, or anything like that.
Right. And so the school safety plans, then. So do you guys meet with the principals then at that for the school safety plans?
We do the comprehensive safety plan at the site meeting, and they review that every year. Basically.
Okay, and that's where a lot of that is. But at the district level, we don't. The hope is that at the site level, they're doing. And ultimately, what happens is we have the district safety committee meeting, and the APs in charge of safety come, and then they go back and bring the information to their site safety, and vice versa. So they will come to us. They report their drills to us, so we know where there might be some issues, so we can address that. And so they bring the information to us. We kind of talk it through, next steps, what do we need to do? Mm-hmm. Is communication an issue? Let's talk about what that means. And then vice versa, we hand back information to them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a two-way street, but the students aren't involved at the district committee. It's more at the school side.
Well, I think it would be better if we had their input. I mean, they're giving us input now. Is that I think if you saw something that, because I would hate for us to do this and we miss something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that would be a crime. So to speak. We're not going to stop that, but I mean, the kids know that it's your best. They go to school every day.
I was going to ask again if you have a thought, write it down so we don't lose it. Do that kind of parking lot idea thing and let our staff keep
So, in essence, really, I mean, that's kind of the roadmap right now. You'll see an item coming to the next board meeting. We'll continue every month to keep you updated on where we're at. We'll be working with the district safety committee meeting and district safety committee, and in turn, then at the school site safety level. Our new loss control analyst, Gordon, who is helping in terms of the safety piece, is going to be asking to join or at least show up at the school site safety meetings. He's the one who is going to be making sure that all of our maps are updated for law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of work. That we're going to be doing between now and the start of the school year, but we'll make sure that we're giving you the update every month because there will be something every month coming to the board. And in addition to that, you'll be seeing some policies that are coming forward, too, that may have to be addressed as we're doing this until we get the school year started and things are happening.
Is the Tonbridge Library involved in this? Because that has access right at our school.
You know what? They haven't been at the district level, but typically if there would be an issue,
usually
then...
Mr. Medina. The Mr. Medina and Ms. Wood, they work with the library.
Okay, so make sure they're involved in this.
Yeah. Okay. So, would you like to say something, Mr. Salazar?
With all due respect to Mrs. Douglas and to the police officers here as well, you know, we have our taxpayers, our parents, our students. They want more quick, immediate answers. And I don't really feel like it's a behavioral issue. And I think what we as a board could immediately do, and I've asked this a number of times going back years ago when our budget was much less, now it's $134 million, we could hire security guards. We could immediately put up a fence. We could immediately put in bulletproof glass. We could immediately get on panic buttons. And a lot of things, I'm obviously not as I don't know anything about this. I just know what I see on the news. I feel like this board should direct our superintendent that a bureaucratic answer isn't what these people want. What these people want is an immediate, and we could hire security guards tomorrow to be walking around this campus.
Amen.
And I think it would calm a lot of people down. It would certainly help the students who have a lot of stress about this. And I don't think a shooter's going to go in and... I don't think the issue is if you don't have the badge operation is important. And I definitely think we should have it because I know I've walked on all of these campuses way before I was ever on this board as a substitute teacher, and I was never questioned by anybody ever about anything, and I could have walked anywhere. But if we had security people on all these campuses, I think it would be a very good thing and not even that expensive. So I think we need to make more immediate, quick decisions, at least to secure these campuses now. And I think that's a good bureaucratic answer. And I know that we have to go through these steps, but I think we should do a lot more. This resolution is great, but it's really not going to prevent anybody from doing anything. So... I just encourage the board to say, look, we have money. We need to spend it now.
Yeah. Yay! So,
if I can come back to security, just a few other things on... we're almost done, and we'll get everybody's comments in here. In terms of the physical perimeter security, while we're focusing on Torrey Pines and SDA, that's who we've talked about because those are our two oldest high schools that were built in a different time. And, you know, so these are the two schools that are the most wide open in terms of access. Our middle schools and our newer high schools are much easier to secure. And if you see the difference between the older Earl Warren and the newer Earl Warren, you know, I think you get the idea of the philosophy that we're looking to build to. So we are focusing on those schools because of the age of those, and it's not to say that we're ignoring, you know, Oak Crest, and we're in the midst of Prop AA projects there, and so this can come in right afterwards to secure Oak Crest campus, and, you know, we would do that throughout the rest of the district. But what I've also advised principals is, to the extent possible, where you've got gates now that you can close during the school day, close those gates up. In some cases, we're going to have to do some hardware, some door configurations. We're going to have to change that because we run up against fire codes that say you can't pen people in. And right now, many of those gates, they have to be chained and padlocked shut to secure them. Well, in a fire or actually a mass evacuation, you don't want to have your gates padlocked shut. And so,
why are they padlocked shut? Why don't we go with this where everybody's got a key to the whole campus that works there?
This would be in an emergency. All students wouldn't have a key to that.
All staff.
Right.
So, have a key that's universal.
Well, actually, in an emergency, you don't want to rely on somebody getting there with the key. And so what we look at are gates with push bars so we can secure it from the outside, but people who need to exit can exit. So... at La Costa Canyon at CCA, where we've got pretty good perimeter fencing but bad gates, that we're looking at doing, making those upgrades as well. in terms of visitor identification. We are being more vigilant about that. And, you know, from the time you were a substitute teacher to where we are now, I know when I'm on a campus, I see lots of people with those fluorescent stickers on them. And actually yesterday when I was at Torrey Pines, it was easy to see who was a teacher, who was a district staff member, who had already signed into the office, and who was just showing up. And so those were the folks that we went up to and approached and said, can I help you, and why are you here? So, that's the type of behavior that we'll be expecting. The culture shift on the gates and securing the perimeters, we're used to having many of those gates wide open and people park where it's convenient. Well, after the first bell rings, those gates will be secured and people are going to get funneled to a common entrance or a single point of entrance, or maybe it's two, depending on the campus. I do want to talk about principal authority and the responsibility that principals have to ensure that campuses are also safe, and their authority to take action. So, we're familiar with the principal's power to enforce school rules through progressive discipline with including restorative practices, suspension, recommendation for expulsion when it comes to students. But they also have the authority to maintain order when it comes to the adults who are disruptive on campus. And the education code, the penal code, and the board policy authorizes principals to deny entrance to any person who's creating a disruption or has presented a disruption or has no legitimate purpose on campus. And so, we do send out or they routinely intercede to address inappropriate behavior on campus, whether that's directed towards students or staff. In some cases, we send formal letters to them advising of their inappropriate conduct and setting expectations for future conduct or directed at staff. We can also ban adults from campus for up to 2 weeks under the penal code when they've caused a disruption or made threats against the school. Those parents who, if we do send one of those letters and prohibiting them from coming from campus, they are still allowed to come on campus if they have a student enrolled there with advance notification and permission if it's for a legitimate educational purpose.
How often have we banned a parent?
We have, in my last 2 years, we've only sent out one of those penal code letters, but we've sent out many of the parent civility letters, and so that's actually pretty routine at all of our school sites.
Back to what you said about the principal, the only thing you say, they're questioning them. How can anyone question anybody on campus? They're working in their classrooms. The teacher, the principal's working in his office. Is that the community resource mm-hmm. officer could not only mm-hmm. be at the school, but even the parking lot. It seems like all the issues over at Torrey Pines, that's where things are going on, where they're talking about someone selling marijuana or some other drugs there. Why don't we have a community resource officer?
Well, we're talking to our principals about additional campus supervisors, so that falls into the security aspect of, that's been suggested. I'll say with our, and I don't know if they left. It looks like they left. that we have, I believe, the best relationship we've had with law enforcement that we've ever had right now, and that the service that we're getting is actually better than when we had SROs. And particularly down in the SDPD area. When we used to have an SRO, they were only able to work 4 days a week. So either they were gone on Friday when it seemed like we had the most activities and needed them the most, or they were gone on Monday when we were cleaning up what happened over the weekend. And now, since I'm saying great things about SDPD right now, I'll get to all of you. But now, with the juvenile services team that we have in the Northwestern Division, there is a team of officers who are assigned to our campuses, and they work 7 days a week and also into the evenings as well. So I see them on our campuses all the time.
They're on the campus, not in their car.
I see
and
them.
We're talking just one, right?
Yeah.
You've got
one or two at a time between Briggs and Flores.
We've got two detectives, or two officers. I have a detective. Mm-hmm. I have a non-sport who is a retired parole officer who's doing a second career. So all of us have been around doing this for a long time. We're all older. And so we bring a formidable amount of experience. But, they get out. They go talk. They go do different things in the schools. The
Officer Briggs is out doing a presentation tonight while this is going on. And a lot of the stuff, you know, I was going to say, so I spent this afternoon, we were just talking about it in the hallway, I did a presentation today in front of all our juvenile services officers, a bunch of them from around San Diego County at the district attorney's office, on how we're looking at assessing threat or managing threat or dealing with it. And we looked at what's been successful for us. And part of it is our protocols, but also part of it is what our schools are providing us. I'm fortunate. I got four school districts, but this one in particular, I got to say, you know, when I come in, the staff, the principals, the APs, the teachers, the counselors, everybody has what I need when I need it. If we've got something that raises up that we have concern, Eric's out there, and we're sitting in, we set up a little command post, and we work it jointly. So that has led not only to us being able to do better things, but it's allowed us to kind of get out there countywide and start a broader discussion about ways we could be doing things.
So you said you have four school districts, so that's quite a few schools. And so then how often do you have someone patrolling every day at each school?
Well, we go around as needed. So if we don't have some committed thing, then my guys are rolling to a different school every day, just dropping in.
But it's just random.
I drop out. It's just random. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the best we can do. You're right. It's between the public and private schools. I have five high schools. I have Torrey Canyon Crest, Cathedral, Del Norte, and Westview. Mm-hmm. And then all the feeder schools.
And all the feeder schools, too. That's a lot.
The Jewish Academy. And then several private schools, a little smaller charter that we deal with.
Right.
So it's quite a bit of oversight. But again, we're not dealing with dramatic violent issues every day. So we also, with the joy of cell phones, we can be talking and interacting all day. Even if we're sitting at our desk trying to catch up on some paper or do something, I've got people calling, they're checking, we're emailing. On the weekends, things will come in. We're in a different world.
Right.
And so, like our kids are connected, in a lot of ways, we're as connected.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm saying is I've actually seen, with all three agencies, I've seen them on campuses more than when we actually had SROs. And with the SRO, the challenges that we had is every juvenile call went to those school resource officers. And sometimes you would have one, and he would be at, or she would be at one campus, and all of the other calls would just pile up at the other campuses because they were funneling every school-related call to those officers. And they weren't sending patrol officers to our schools. And so now, you know, under this model that we have now, if we don't have immediate access to either juvenile services or juvenile detectives, you know, we're getting the patrol service that we didn't have before. So, again, I'm seeing those folks who have been assigned to our schools actually there more often. And when we need the support of their stations, they're sending it immediately. And so I really do believe that we're getting better service now than what we had. I honestly believe that.
I guess, and I think you guys are great, is that I think in your talk you said it took like 30 minutes. To me, that's concerning, is that that's a long time. We call someone. I mean, there's an immediate, something's happening. Is I think when you're saying, oh, community resource officers, they can work hand in hand. Don't they work hand in hand with you? Is that I don't think so. They're going to get piled up. Is that I think working hand in hand, going towards all the issues. You know, and I don't see an extra layer of security as a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, saying no to that when obviously the parents want. I got to tell you something. I'm hearing more about, you know, drugs and everything like that. You know, it's not good. It doesn't go good with kids. It's not good for their learning. It's not good for them at all.
How much money are we spending on this? Mrs. Douglas said $1.8 million, but is that all?
That would be on physical security aspects.
So is that's that all? $1.8 million, that's all?
Well, that's what we've got set aside from the CFD bonds. We're also looking at how we can overlay perhaps some Prop AA funds on that too, but we have to make sure that we're using those funds correctly and in conformance with the bond language. So we would have additional.
What is that, less than 2% of our budget?
So I'd like
but that's you're thinking general fund, and I'm talking our facilities dollars, our capital funds.
Yeah. So I'd like to ask them, a community resource officer, would that, if you work hand in hand with them, if we were to have someone like that? Is that because I thought that would be a good addition, helping you?
Well, we have a community relay resource officer. It's Trevor Phillips, and so he handles the whole command. So certainly, if there's stuff that I need, I bring them on board all the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if we were to have more people, would that be more helpful? Because it seems like you're spread kind of thin, and I just want to make sure that we're at a level that all the kids are safe and our community is safe.
I love that thought. I mean, we don't have SROs, but they're assigned. They're essentially SROs. They just
right.
flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're assigned to me. It would be great to have more because we could do some more stuff. But mm-hmm. that challenge isn't just about having the budget to do it. We're tremendously understaffed in San Diego Police.
Right.
And so it's a matter of where do we get these people?
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to be cops. I got 3 more years before I can't be a cop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could hire me back maybe part-time.
Right.
But I'm timed out. Where do we get these people? So part of it is having the budget to do it. Would I love to have one for every high school so that we could do...
That's something I would like to see, too.
Stuff. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's more than just that. There's a lot of other challenges that come in. So I make do with what I have, and right now I think it works pretty well. The cooperation...
Well, I want to work with you.
We're all in this together.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you, and I really appreciate
so,
you coming.
Yeah,
tonight.
So I'm going to cut short the rest of my comments. Believe it or not, I had more, but and let Mr. Miller, close up on the future of our wellness initiatives.
Good. I just got warning that my battery is going to go out here pretty soon.
Mine too.
All right. So as our local law enforcement officers mentioned, school safety and student wellness takes a village, and one key partner are our parent groups. So we recently reached out to a set of parents to talk about how we can partner and plan a resource and speaker to come to the North End and the South End to promote social-emotional learning. So on March 21st at La Costa Canyon and March 27th at Torrey Pines High School, we will be welcoming Tyler Derman to come speak to our parent community, covering overall student wellness and relevant issues for parents of current students. This night will provide our parent community with practical tips on how to better equip children with social and emotional balance. We just recently held a similar event at Earl Warren and Carmel Valley in February, and it was very well received. Prior to this event, our social workers are actively engaging our community resources, and we'll be hosting a resource fair 1 hour prior to that event. We will also be forming a social-emotional learning collaborative comprised of school site representatives such as administrators, counselors, and social workers, as well as parent reps from each of our sites to serve as an advisory group for our LCAP goal, which looks at supporting social-emotional learning. And through this collaborative effort, we will continue to provide a full continuum of support for our students, parents, and staff to keep our focus on prevention and to maintain safe, engaging, and inclusive learning environment.
So those two parents that you're using that are helping you, what degrees they have in this?
They're parents, and we're getting their feedback on what issues that they're currently seeing within their household, working with their own children, going to our schools.
So right, so we're getting better if they're experts in health and wellness, too?
Not necessarily, because I'm trying to get their feedback in terms of what challenges are they having raising their teenager so that we can best plan our support around our parents.
So just groups. Using two parents as your focus group?
Well, so the North End is using some of their parent groups and as well as the South End. So these were just happen to be parents from the South End, but I know Mr. Marcus, who's also assisting with the North End event, is leveraging his parent group to get feedback. We also brought in a group of ASB students from La Costa Canyon and said, okay, you know, what are some challenges that you're facing in terms of working with your parents? I mean, I'm a parent of a teenager. I know it's not always easy every day to pick their brain around, okay, what are some things that you wish your parents could hear in terms of if we brought in a speaker and they provide a wealth of resources, a wealth of information around, you know, balance and stress and just sometimes being able that they wish they could just be a teenager and go to school and not have to worry about some of the pressure.
So the support groups are coming from this?
Correct. So we blanketed our community resources that can provide additional supports because our students attend schools from around 8 to 2:30. So after 2:30, you know, what are some of those community supports that we could steer our parents toward or our students to if they needed further support?
that's, you know what, I don't think that's a good idea. Most kids are so busy is that every kid at every school is going to sports and they don't have any time for that. Is that you've got to look at the time frame where the kids have time. And after school, that's usually how our kids are free. Is that if you make this really support for them, is that I think you need to look at maybe going back and say when is a better time than after school. Because they're just so busy.
You want us to bring community resources on during the school
no,
day?
No, I'm just saying look at a time that you're saying you're using all these community resources after school. Is that most kids, that's when they're busy.
What he's saying
is... I'm certain that all 13,000 students play athletics as well.
I know, but they're into sports, performing arts, and I got to tell you something, all the kids that I know are really busy.
I think what he's talking about is that we've got services and support during the school day, but we also recognize that we only have them for a certain time of the day. Mm-hmm. And so what else is available outside of the school day when they're not our students, and so we can steer parents and kids towards other programs outside of our own, so that there's a continuum of support and a partnership between the school district and our community resources. So it's recognizing that we're not the only solution. It also has to be, you know, there have to be community solutions as well.
No, well, that's the problem is that a lot of kids don't even know. They don't know where to connect to things.
Right, and that's Absolutely. What we're trying to promote.
Right.
Yes.
And the goal of the resource there is to point parents in the direction towards those resources so they can have that at their fingertips.
But no, I think it would be a great option is if you reached out to athletics, because almost all the kids do something in athletics for performing arts, and tell them at the beginning, maybe giving it the hour, this is what, if you want to go to these resources, this is where it's at, and naturally you'll reach all the kids.
And I appreciate that. And that ASB group that we talked to had a performing art student, had an athletic student, and had other students that also did after-school activities. So it was great to hear their feedback. And they thought the resource fair was a fantastic idea. And sharing the speaker that we're going to present, they also thought that the speaker would
well, I'd like more kids to get zero resources.
Absolutely.
If I could thank staff for doing this update, I know we'll be having more information brought back to us regularly. And if you have, does somebody have any other questions for any of our other board members? If not, I'd like to move us forward because we have several more items this evening to still address.
So now it would be consideration of the resolution.
Right, okay.
And discussion.
I want to make sure we were ready to move on before I did that. So,
and I have discussion concerning the resolution.
Concerning resolution. Okay, so we are ready to have that discussion regarding the resolution for student safety.
I would like to propose our next board agenda. I would like to see community resource officers for each of the schools.
That would come under future agenda items.
Yeah,
so
if we could put that on, that'd be great.
Please have discussion on the resolution at the moment.
Okay, the resolution is great, but as far as I'm concerned, it does not have the teeth that it needs to really use our voices, which are unique. We have a unique opportunity to use our voices in a very strong manner. And I think that we absolutely need to address the issue of automatic weapons. There are two resolutions that I've looked at. One is from the San Diego Unified School District, and the other is from the City of Encinitas. Both of those resolutions have strong language regarding the ban on all of the assault, everything that has been discussed, the bump stocks and the everything that's included. And I have those resolutions here. And for example, the San Diego Unified has many, many, many of the same points we have, but it includes, in addition, school district demands action from our state and federal representatives to reinstate the assault weapons ban and adopt stricter controls governing the sale, transfer, possession, manufacturing, and distribution of all firearms, dangerous weapons, and ammunition. In addition, they also call for an outright ban on semi-automatic firearms, high-capacity magazines, armored ammunition, bump stocks, and any other equipment, alteration, or modification that would increase a firearm's capacity for ammunition or rate of fire.
Yes.
And they go further to say that they would like to have reasonable waiting periods and mandated training in the safe use of guns. Again, that's the San Diego Unified District resolution.
And I know some of that language was, I think, exactly the same that Encinitas used, although not 100%.
Yes, yes.
And that's Encinitas School District. That's
right.
Not
right. Right. Encinitas.
I want to say
the city of Encinitas is the one I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Encinitas School District.
School District, yeah. Yes, I did talk to Eric, and I got to give Eric kudos to this. I don't want to act like I don't realize like what you're drinking. I do appreciate that. Is that I talked to Eric about the Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. He was all over it. He said that he's talking about making a uniform convention, I don't think mm-hmm. call it, like summit, mm-hmm. is K-12, and I want to say that as I called him, he was very responsive about that, going to them and talking to them and getting something in place. It's not that we're not doing that. Eric is doing something. He is moving forward to reach out.
But that's we're looking at that's not
I know, but I want you to talk about this.
I'm talking about the resolution,
but I'm saying Eric has done something to go forward with this. He is reaching out to other school districts to make something that's uniform, and maybe you want to talk about that later, that's going to happen within our school districts and be more aggressive about a lot of things, and you know more about this than I do, but I give you kudos for that.
Well, that's great, and I really appreciate that Eric will be doing that. But in the meantime, we have a resolution in front of us. And the resolution, as far as I'm concerned, does not go far enough. We have a really unique ability to raise our voices against the cultural violence that we're seeing in our
and I would say I'm not sure exactly where everybody stands on this board, but I'm fine with us considering an additional, be it further resolved, statement. Mm-hmm. I know Mr. Dill looked at like three different put together something he felt that we all could support, but we're certainly welcome to adapt this. So I guess what I would hope is if there's a specific one of these statements from, I mean, I could read the one that the Encinitas City Schools did, see if the language works for you, or if you have one that you prefer there, that then we could insert that and consider that for our motion and our resolution.
Well, you had like 4 days to make a discussion on which one. Where are you? I mean, I got to tell you something. When I read this, and the most important thing I see is collaboration, and I want people to know, like we did get, when we talk about collaborations with, that's one thing I liked about this, is with the police and with our people, with our parents. And that's what I liked about this, is that we're also including our community, and I think we are doing that, too. And I think that's something that maybe we don't talk about enough. And I think tonight when the law enforcement came here and said we are reaching out, I think it's important to us to recognize that, and I don't think that our community has realized that.
Enough. Okay, good.
That's why we're talking about right. The resolution is, I think, mm-hmm. all the other parts that Eric included that, and I think here what he's talking about is that you know I talked to Eric at length about this. Is that I do want to say is kudos to him. We do have a lot of resources that we've reached out to and have made a collaboration with law enforcement. And that's why I thought this was so important that we could hire the social workers. I don't think people realize that. We've made some grounds there.
Mrs. Muir, we are talking about
right.
a resolution.
That is resolution.
Okay, so what do we want to change?
There's nothing wrong with the resolution other than the fact it does not include these points that give it some strength. There's nothing wrong with the rest of the resolution. I have no objection to simply inserting this into the resolution that we have before us.
Okay. So okay, I don't even know. I mean,
no,
I would
agree with that. I think that I made that pretty clear when I talked to Superintendent Dill too, that I feel that this resolution that represents what we've done and what we expect is very good, but I feel like we've missed that opportunity to have a stronger message to send on to our lawmakers about
yes.
what we feel is important and what our district feels is important that they can do. And so I would support stronger language from what I'm guessing you have those two items from San Diego Unified, or I'm not sure how the difference from Encinitas. I hadn't seen that. I'd seen San Diego Unified.
What was the rationale, Mr. Dill, Mrs. Herdich?
Well, I sent this sample out and to all five of you and basically took parts of three different ones and asked for feedback on that. And, you know, the conversations I had with Mrs. D'Alessandro and Mrs. Herman were after we posted the final agenda. So, you know, and I did suggest to them that they could make a motion or make an amendment if they felt that they needed that extra language.
We can bring it back. I'm not familiar. I didn't look at the other two. I just looked at this one. I'm not going to make a snap judgment on something.
All we're really looking at is adding.
You know, is now you're like pulling something that I haven't seen and on this slide I've looked at.
I'm willing to read. Whereas that Encinitas School District just did this week, and if we're comfortable with it, we add it as an additional.
And I believe that is the final paragraph of the San Diego Unified resolution, which I did send to all of you.
Okay. So this would say, be it further resolved that strict controls include not only comprehensive and thorough background checks of all purchases of firearms, including curios and relics, dangerous weapons and ammunition, and include the purchase of those items facilitated through the internet and at gun shows, but also an outright ban on semi-automatic firearms, high-capacity magazines, armor-piercing ammunition, bump stocks, and any other equipment, alteration, or modification that would increase a firearm's capacity for ammunition or rate of fire, and an increase in the age to purchase a weapon from 18 to 21, as well as reasonable waiting periods and mandated training in the safe use of guns. If you're comfortable with that, we could take the resolution as presented, add this as an additional, be it further resolved, have a motion, a second, and take a vote unless we need further discussion.
Well, one of the things that's said in San Diego Unified is demands action from our state and federal representatives.
Was that in a different...
And go on.
Yeah, I don't even...
Actually, we do have that.
We have that in a different whereas. In a different be it resolved.
Okay, well, I think
we have our forum in there, too.
And no guns in the classroom.
No what?
No guns in the classroom.
100%.
There goes that.
That's the current California law. That's current California law.
I'm happy with the resolution you read inserting that.
Okay. Is the motion clear as far as you're concerned, Ms. Schultz? Do I have a motion to accept, to adopt the resolution in support of student safety and prevent school violence with the addition of this be it further resolved statement as I read it?
Move approval.
I think that we should wait, because you're telling me something now I haven't seen. You're asking for a quick answer on this. Is that I always look into everything before. I mean, you're saying look at now, and I'm reaching out. I will reach out to the law enforcement too. Is I don't make snap decisions on something.
Well, I want to make sure. I'm going to ask if I have a second, and then we'll just go ahead and move forward because
of course
we've got a packed agenda here. And I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Is that procedure okay if we do that since we have a motion on the table?
Okay. You ready?
I am ready. It's a roll call.
Scott Geyer?
No.
Mr. Salazar?
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
Oh, no.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. Thank you. That brings us to item 17, which is adoption of a resolution for full and fair funding of California's public schools. Mr. Dill.
Okay. So we applaud the governor for accelerating the implementation of the local control funding formula 2 years ahead of schedule. That funding level, as adjusted by inflation, only takes schools back to where they were in 2007 and 2008, but Some of those costs that we pay for have risen faster than the pace of inflation, such as health care and retirement costs. So really, when we look at getting back to 2007 and 8, which is what the governor is proposing for next year, we're falling behind in our buying power. And when we look at where California is in terms of per student funding, there's many different ways of looking at that, and many different organizations and think tanks do that math for us and look at us nationwide. California always remains near the bottom. And here we are as the wealthiest state and the most prosperous nation in the world, and with some of the most challenging demographics, and so we should not tolerate that level of funding. I was at a meeting with somebody from the California Department of Finance on Friday, and he was talking about how, you know, we're rising to maybe in the 30s. And the point that I made was, with the local control funding formula, you know, some of those districts that have a high unduplicated count are going to be way high. But other districts like us, who are more affluent, are going to be below that California average. So it's sort of like the person who's got their head in the oven but their feet in the freezer, and on average they're comfortable. You know, we are definitely either in that very hot or very cold range. And as a state, I think it's important that we send a message to our legislators and the administration that we need to set a more aspirational target for our per student funding. We appreciate the proposal that the governor has on the table, but as we look into future years, we really would be looking at just a COLA only environment in terms of increase in funding, when we have fallen behind in the last few years.
What do you attribute this to? I mean, you have our governor, Jerry Brown, been there for 8 years, or almost 8 years, and, you know, Gavin Newsom's been there the whole time, and both legislators are controlled by the Democrats. Why do you think this is the situation that we're in?
It's this goes back decades and many different administrations, and Prop 98 was passed, and it was called the minimum guarantee, but it's in effect been a ceiling. And so,
Prop 98 gives what percentage of the budget?
So there's three different tests that it would give, but roughly K-12 would be in the mid 40% of the state budget. You add higher ed in there, and we get about 50, 51, 52, 53% somewhere in there.
So 51% of the budget goes towards education.
K through higher ed, roughly. So,
why would you think that would be enough? Why isn't that enough?
Well, if you look at what other states spend per student, that they are much higher. And so, you know, we are approximately $2,000 per student below the national average. So just an average state spends $2,000 a kid more than we do, which would be another $26 million for us if we received that sort
the
of revenue.
Average.
But what I don't understand is, we're the highest tax state in the union. I don't understand.
Yeah, but the percentage of taxable income that's spent on education is actually lower in California. So our piece of the pie is lower, and it really comes down to the pie is only so big, and so when all of the departments get together in the Department of Finance, they basically look at education and they say, we have to give education this, and they give the Prop 98 guarantee. And they stop there at the minimum. They rarely ever go over the minimum guarantee.
And that's 51% of the budget.
And in a good year, yes. And so and then they take the rest of the budget pie and they divide it among all of the other state services. And there's demand on those services as well. And so there's advocates, you know, for prisons, health and human services,
roads,
exactly, Caltrans, all of those things, all fit into that overall budget pie. And so, so neither the legislature nor this nor any previous governor has been willing to go above the minimum guarantee. And so it's kept California down at the bottom.
I have another question for you. When I first started on the school board, we were getting about $100 million, slightly less, $98 million a year. Now we're getting $134 million a year. That's only been 7 years. We're getting 34% more.
Before that.
Is that because we have more students?
So we have grown in terms of enrollment, and also you came on kind of as we were in the midst of the recession, and so we had some drastic cuts in the years before, and during your initial years here as well. We were fighting a reduced revenue, and now we've been restored. And so it's restored back to 07-08 levels, but as adjusted for inflation. So it's gone up every year. The target has gone up every year, and we're going to hit that target in 18-19. But again, that's only on the revenue side, and it doesn't really match the growth in many of our expenditures, many of which are beyond our control. As I mentioned, I'm meeting with CalPERS and CalSTRS next week, which is something that we didn't have the same obligations in 07-08 that we do now for that. So the additional funding that we've received has been eroded by other structural costs in there. By the way, my friends from law enforthment, you don't need to stay for the rest of the meeting if you don't need to. We've moved on to the other item. Yeah. thank you for coming, gentlemen. Yeah. So that's I'm sorry to suddenly shift there.
That's great. No, I'm all for more funding, but it just seems to me like we are getting additional funding. And I know we're already being taxed.
Things are definitely better than they were. But when you compare us to the rest of the country, and exactly to your point, we're the most prosperous state and the wealthiest nation in the world, and yet we're at the bottom in terms of, or near the bottom in terms of per student spending as a state.
Is there a big difference?
Yeah. Again, so if you look at just the average, so right in the middle. It's $2,000 a student more, but if you look at the top, it's $7,000 to $10,000 a student more. So, you know, that would be another $130 million. That would essentially be almost doubling our budget, our revenue, I should say.
Yeah.
All right, do we have any further questions, or can we bring forward the question? I need a motion to adopt the resolution calling for full and fair funding of California's public schools.
I move approval.
Yeah. Second. All right. We need a roll call again, Mr.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Excuse me. Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Thank you. This brings us to adoption of the resolution statutory fee increase with urgency. I need to open the hearing. Do we have any public comments for this portion of our
meeting? We do not.
Then I'm going to close that hearing, and Ms. Douglas, I believe.
So this is, last month we brought forward to you an increase for the developer fees, which was approved. We requested and the board approved a 30-day extension, if you will, to be able to levy fees right away. This would be extending that for another 30 days, so that then we'll be in alignment with the 60-day compliance portion. So that's what this item is here for you today.
All right. Thank you. Do we have any questions regarding this item? Hearing none, could I have a motion to adopt the resolution levying fees on development projects with urgency as shown in the attached supplement?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Oh, yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Which brings us to item 19, which is our approval and certification of our 2017-18 general fund second interim budget. Ms. Douglas.
So we have before you tonight the second interim report, and Ms. Purley is here to provide you with what the changes have been from first interim to second interim.
Thank you for staying, Ms.
Are you making comment after she speaks?
Did we have public comment?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay,
sorry,
Ms.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry about that.
We're just answering some of my questions.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the prompt.
Happy for you, second interim. Not as is common at second interim, there are very few changes from first interim. The changes are shown in a little more detail on pages 133 and 134, where we recap the actual changes to the budget. So revenue, some changes there, some of them ordinary at this time of year, some of them not. The federal special ed revenue is reduced due to new allocations. When those come out, we reduce those budgets. We don't reduce services. They just cost shift to the special ed budget. So currently, we will look at that at year end and actually probably spring revision and kind of adjust those budgets a little further. Prop 39, Clean Energy Jobs Act. Our expenditure plan was approved a few months ago, and they came out with the allocation, so we add that to our budget in both revenue and expenses. And that will be used as the first round of funding, around the same dollar amount, $1.2 million, for it's like a two-year allocation. This added $600,000. Will be used for LED lighting, interior and exterior at some of the schools. We've done some of that lighting. We've done it in here. We've done it in many of our schools. So that will continue. That work will continue to be done. Local revenue, there is the standard that we do every time we bring you a budget. We increase for donations received in various areas, and we increase the revenue as well as the expenditure sites, so sites have the budget to spend. And the case of transportation, we brought that down. That is the one donation budget that historically we have budgeted an estimate because we generally hit or exceed it. And the other donations, we don't always know what kind of things are going to happen at the school site. So going into 17-18, we built that budget. We do check it on a regular basis as we get about halfway through the year. And we're seeing that those donations are coming in at a lower pace than they were in prior years. And so we've reduced the revenue budget. No expenditure budgets have been reduced, just the revenue budget in this case. Looking at what we will do next year and how we budget that, just because this has been one that doesn't fit those same guidelines due to some other circumstances that it's just always come in at our estimates. But we may lower it going into 18-19. We may do some other things with that particular revenue side of that budget. Expenditure budgets remain the same in those because they're not, the transportation budgets are not tied as much to the together as the school site donation accounts. So that kind of some basic information on it.
And just on the transportation, is that related home to school or is that
no? That is athletics, solely athletics. Okay. Home to school, the bus fees that we have attached to those, those are tracking fine at this point because we sell bus passes twice a year, so we can adjust those. And, you know, as soon as all that revenue comes in, generally those are set at an okay rate based on we sell about the same number of passes every year, so that's been staying about the same. On the expenditure side, some of those revenue pieces are tied to expenditure budgets as well. Those have increased, as well as the 5% salary schedule increase for certificated that was approved in December. That is now in this budget. And new for second interim, we have talked about it a few times coming up to the second interim period. We have several restricted programs that we get funding in 1 year and we use that funding over the course of 2 or 3 years. TUPE would be one of those grants. It's a 3-year grant. CTE funding has come in that way in the past. College readiness has come in like that. That's one-time funding. And so what we're doing at second interim is lowering those restricted budgets and to allow us to carry over the restricted balance into the 18-19 year for budget, as well as some of it goes into the 19-20 year on the multi-year. So that's just lowering the expenditure side for planned expenditures in future years. One of the biggest pieces of that is restricted lottery, and we use that for our instructional materials, and we know we will not spend it all in 1 year. So that carries over so that we can spend that in future years. So that just shows an ending balance, kind of brings me to the ending balance. The budgets that are reduced tied to those are mostly books and supplies. Some of it is in services. So those budgets are reduced on the expenditure side, and that causes an ending balance in the restricted side of the budget. So with that, that shows that our deficit and ending balance is, the deficit slightly improved, and the ending balance is going up by about $1 million. So that's kind of, it's a little confusing because we have not shown it that way, but we want to be able to reflect that as we go into 18-19, and when departments are building those budgets, we have the funds that we know we already have that will fund those multi-year programs. So if there's any questions on that, I can explain it further, but we have talked about it a couple of different times. I think showed a sample, kind of a sample of what it would look like at First Interim. We showed a sample. So with that on the multi-year, since First Interim, the only assumptions that have changed are the governor's proposed budget, 18-19 budget. Those assumptions are built into the 18-19 year. And what that did was, because the governor is currently proposing full funding of LCFF, is it shifted more funding in 18-19 to LCFF. It increased that funding, but it took it from 19-20 and 2021, which you don't see. But it basically just shifted that, which did improve the outlook a little bit, just the way COLAs kind of multiply on there, the multiplying effect of that. But that is built in. The governor's one-time funding, proposed one-time funding, is not, because that has changed considerably in the last couple of years from the January budget to May revise to actual adoption. So until we know where that lands, we don't want to plan on it. It is one-time funding, and we will build that in as the current proposals are when it comes time to build our 18-19 budget, which is also before the final budget. So with the full funding of LCFF in an earlier year, it improves the deficit in the out years as well as the reserves a little bit. The net effect in that final year, we are meeting our the board recommended 4.5% in both the subsequent years. However, we are using a little bit of the special reserves in the 19-20 year. So I think that sums it up.
Questions for Ms. Perley or Ms. Douglas?
So when are we going to start putting reprimanding back into our reserves?
The planning for 18-19 is underway. And so that is something we always look at. We've always got our eye on the deficit and ways that we can help that. But, you know, our multi-year has reasonable assumptions built into it. And, you know, what the ending reserves is a mathematical equation. And what happens in the revenue and expenditure side and the deficit, the resulting deficit or surplus, is going to add or subtract from the reserves. So.
We do not have further questions.
Ms. Westberg had questions, sorry.
Reminding us here. So,
comments.
Beth Westberg has a comment on this item before we take a vote.
Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Hi. I just wanted to have some more information regarding some of the budget items. So the deficit. So last year at this time, last year's budget was showing a $9.2 million deficit. And when questioned about it, Joyce said something to the tune of, well, I don't worry about it, it always works out. Well, last year it didn't work out so well. We ended up with a $3 million deficit. And Tina Douglas stated at the workshop that the budget would look different this time. And apparently some of the prior budgets included items that weren't supposed to be there, like restricted funds, et cetera. And Tina said we'd be able to rely on this budget to be more accurate. So my question is, how accurate is this updated budget? It shows an $8 million deficit. Is that what we think we're going to end up with at the end of the year? Or are we going to have some wild swings again? Or are these figures true? Should Joyce worry? You know, what's going on with the budget? So those are my questions. Budgeting, and since we're in that time of the season when our thoughts turn to next year's budget, I'm wondering if we'll see any changes. For instance, will we see all of the athletic and extracurricular expenses in the budget, regardless of who pays for them? Or will you continue to underestimate your expenditures? I understand you don't book revenue until you receive it, but you just said you book revenue and expenditures when you receive the revenue. So I want to know if that will be in there. Also, I noticed that the schools that without solar energy were paying significantly higher energy costs. I know that's probably obvious. But the solar systems are paid by the Prop AA funds, and that's paid by the entire community. So why aren't all students benefiting from the reduced energy costs at the schools that have solar? I would propose that the entire energy budget be allocated among the schools on a per-student allocation, so all schools benefit from lower energy bills, not just the ones lucky enough to install solar. And if not, when do you plan to add solar to those remaining campuses? You've been making some, seems like there's been some like secret cuts being made in the budgets, and so I'm just wondering if you can give some updates on why Naviance is going away, when what's the replacement, parents know nothing about it. The PSAT. So this year, two schools chose to offer the PSAT. I'm not sure if this is even legal since the two academies offered three PSATs to all of their junior students, and Torrey Pines and LCC offered the PSATs for a fee. Who makes these decisions? Is it legal and equitable for some students to receive something for free while making other students pay for it? And if you're encouraging students to attend Torrey Pines and LCC, this doesn't help your marketing efforts. Next, I have parent requests. So we've been talking to a lot of parents about budgets and things that are happening in the district, and I'll tell you what they want and what they're willing to pay for. They want to add an additional counselor to each high school. We all know our counseling department's understaffed. We want to hire two full-time athletic directors to cover the four high schools. We want to hire the appropriate grounds persons or outside entities to maintain our athletic fields to a better standard than the district's current standards. Currently, we have volunteers maintaining the fields, and there are many reasons why we should have paid professionals maintaining school grounds. Last, this is a short list, PSATs for all. Yes, parents will pay for these items and more. How do we accomplish this? What's the process? I'd appreciate hearing your discussion about these items tonight so we can hear your responses and thought processes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think Ms. Douglas and Mr. Miller can answer some of those questions about solar and Naviance and PSAT.
And I may not remember all the questions, but so in terms of solar panels, we provide an allocation to each school site per student, and it has nothing to do with the savings that is taking place because of the solar panels at the school. So if a school has solar panels, that particular school is not seeing the savings, if you will, in terms of energy efficiency at that school site alone.
It's a district-level budget.
Correct.
That pays utilities. It's not a school site level.
If you look at the high school site budgets, utilities is on there.
It's not.
Utilities are on there.
I will tell you. You know what? She had her 3 minutes, and so now we're answering the question. So we may show that a utility cost is tagged to a particular location, but the actual payment of that is a district-level budget. So it's not coming out of the school site's allocation, per-student allocation, to pay utilities whether they have solar or they don't have solar.
It's a tracking mechanism internally, so we can identify how much it costs to run utilities by school site. That's in essence what it is. But it does not come out of the school site's allocation. I don't remember any other questions.
So I think with respect to Naviance and the PSAT.
So for Naviance, I did provide the board with an update in January in terms of our Naviance process, but for public record, as Mr. Salazar alluded to tonight, our Naviance subscription was up at the end of the year, so we did our due diligence, and we vetted multiple companies that provide a service similar to Naviance. And in this vetting process, we had a group of counselors look at various products and also look at our usage rate for Naviance. The usage rate for Naviance was extremely low for grades 7, 8, 9, 10. It started to bump up in the spring for juniors, and then for seniors it was very high. So we are basically paying for a product for just 12th graders. So what we wanted to do was look at, hey, what's a product that would serve all students? And so we came across a product called californiacolleges.edu, and we vetted that along with some other products, and we are going to be moving forward with californiacolleges.edu. We had a transition plan that was gone through with all of our counselors, and they were to vet it at all their college information, or at all their information nights for the spring. So that's the answer to Naviance. As far as the PSAT was administered to 9, 10, and 11 at one point. That was through grant funding. We no longer have that grant funding. So that is a site decision for offering the PSAT. The PSAT is not a required test to give through the California Department of Education. That's the CASP test, which we give in the spring. The PSAT is something that we just offer to our community and use our sites to give. And so some sites this year chose to give it on Saturday, and some chose to give it during the school day. And again, we leave that to the sites to work with their communities on when they're going to administer that test.
Did they charge for it?
Yes, they did. So some sites did charge for it on a Saturday, as they are allowed to do.
Similar with the SAT.
Did we decide to do that? I mean, as a board?
So there's no funding for...
Where does the money go to the site?
To administer the test. So with the test, we have to give proctors...
It's not free to us.
It's not free. Yeah,
we have to pay for proctors. We have to...
So the test actually costs, and then the proctors cost, and then so there's fees to administer the test.
It'd be similar to SAT or ACT. Mm-hmm. Along those same lines. And I think all the rest of the questions were essentially about future years.
Well, and the I think an important question was about the deficit. Are we... Is Mrs. Purley pretty confident that it's going to be 8.2 million?
Well, I didn't start off this way because I generally do. Our budgets are always worst-case scenario. And we always see an increase or an improvement to the deficit when we close the books, because many of the budgets that are set aside for departments and managers are not fully spent. And when that happens, those roll into the ending balance, and that improves the deficit. So do I feel confident that as it stands at the end of January, which is when this budget cuts off, second interim cuts off, that that's our budget as it stood January 31st? Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. But do I think that the deficit it will improve? Well, if history proves... Yes, it will. Okay. you know, some budgets more than others have remaining balances. We do try to adjust those as we go. We don't take money from school sites. We don't reduce those budgets. We do reduce some department budgets. Maintenance has a budget. That's where the utility budget lies. Mm-hmm. If that needs to be adjusted, we do that. We do show that by school site. Mr. Dill said this before, our account code is 32 digits long. The last six digits of that tells me which manager is responsible for the budget and what site they're wanting to track. So the fact that that budget in maintenance for utilities is a budget to pay the utilities. They divide it by site because they like to see that, mm-hmm. and we like to see that when we started the solar projects. We really wanted to see that. But that budget, we may find at spring revision, could be brought down a little bit. And I believe that it can, because there is a little bit of savings right now, but we're going to wait until we're a little further along in the year. So we have some other budgets that we do review, and the remaining balances at spring revision. If we bring you budgets brought down at spring revision, that will, chances are, improve the deficit at that point. But until we close the books, it all settles when we close the books. Yeah. That's our final
number. So, you know, utilities, are a great example because, you know, we budget a worst-case scenario on utilities at the beginning of the year, not knowing if we're going to have a hot September and a cold January or not. And so sometimes our usage on air conditioning and heating isn't as much as we have built in because we're assuming we're going to run in more AC and more heat in the hot and cold months. If we have mild falls and winters, we save money on that. And so by the end of the year, we save that. Same with, say, substitute costs. If we have a terrible cold and flu season, we might use up the whole sub budget. But if we don't, we'll have savings by the end of the year. But right now, as of January 31st, you know, we've got a budget that's assuming that we're going to have teachers and classified staff out sick with the cold and flu through that season. So that's just two examples of budgets that are higher, expenditure budgets that are higher now, that improve over time.
So what about more counselors?
That would be, well, we're talking about that's next year, budget. And yeah, so that's, and we have been talking about athletic directors too, which Ms. Westberg mentioned, so we're talking about counseling staff. We're talking about
so what does that mean, talking? How much are we talking about? How many people are you talking about? Okay,
well, we're not
that's actually a
again,
future
that's
budget.
That's a next year, and that's the work that we do with our principals at this point as we look at what the enrollment is for each one of our schools, all 10 of them, and determine either via formula or non-formula what adequate levels would be, and do we want to increase, decrease in any of those areas. You know, and all of the other things that were suggested tonight that we ought to add into the budget, they're all part of our budget discussions for 18-19, and you know, we're working on that through May, and we'll bring recommendations forward, you know, either starting May, early June for additional or for eventual approval at the second meeting in June.
Okay.
So we'll have another workshop, just as we always do in the late spring, to go over options that we could add or subtract into the budget.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Can I ask, my recollection, I think we've only done this once before, where we might go beyond 10 o'clock. I believe I need to get a motion.
3 minutes.
Yeah, we've got a couple other discussions, I'm thinking. So
should we vote on this item and then talk about extension?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Yep. Okay, so I need a motion to approve and certify the 2017 second interim budget.
So moved.
Second.
All right, and
Mike, just quick comment is I'm not going to be able to again support this. I think a budget that's 89% salaries and benefits is not thinking enough about the students. Certainly isn't covering any additional concern about security, and so again, I'm going to have to. This is not new for me, but I'm going to have to say that.
Scott, I'm going to stay. I'm going to go home. I know you got school tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll head out in a minute.
Thanks.
Last man standing.
We do have an actual mandate for how much we have to spend on personnel that serves students, don't we?
Yeah, that's a percentage of the overall budget, and we do hit that.
Right.
Well, and I'd like to point out this is a reflection of what has been spent, and this is accurate to what's been spent versus budgeting in the future, which there are discussions about. So believe that this is accurate, and I support approving it.
Okay. All right, well, it's been moved and it's been seconded, so I'm going to call for a vote. All in favor of approving certification of our 2017-18 general fund second interim budget. Signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
That carries. And we're almost exactly at 10 o'clock, so I have a few items here. So could
So what this board bylaw requires is that the board take a vote to continue the meeting after 10 o'clock and at what time the meeting will end, and there's only one vote on this. So we do have three more items. I think the next two will go rather quickly, and then item 22, we have one speaker slip, and it's going to be up to the board how long that discussion lasts.
Then if we have any other updates, so could I suggest 10:30, and if we can finish before then, we finish before then, but
is it half an hour long enough? 11's fine.
Okay, if we can go, if we can be done, be done.
30.
And then that's it?
I agree. Yeah.
Okay, 10:30.
Okay,
so I hear a motion for 10:30. You have a second? All in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, let's continue with item 20, which is acceptance of our 2016-17 annual audit proposition, AA Building Fund audit report. Again, Ms. Douglas, busy night.
So in similar fashion to our district audit for all of our other funds, we also have an external auditor come in and audit these funds for Prop AA. And what they do is ensure that the dollars are spent on the projects that were identified in terms of the bond. So the audit report was presented to the ICOC Tuesday of this week. Noted that there were no findings in the audit, that everything is looking good, and everything is being spent according to what was identified in the bond.
Okay. All right. Any questions regarding that report? Then I need a motion to accept the 2016-17 annual report.
So
I have a second.
Second.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That carries. Item 21 is adoption of resolution for emergency waiver public project.
So as if Torrey Pines doesn't have enough to deal with, they have an elevator that was being looked at in terms of a repair. The agency that went out there to make the repairs deemed it unsafe, closed it off for service, and we need, in order for us to be able to start the work, we, under CUPCA, the board is allowed to approve this as an emergency by a 4/5 vote, and then we're able to move forward with the work, as opposed to waiting to go through a bid process so that it doesn't prolong it any longer. It's the only elevator that provides access to the second floor of the Learning Commons, so that we wanted to get started on the work right away.
Great. So do I have a motion to adopt the resolution for emergency waiver?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Salazar?
Yes.
Ms. D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. And that brings us to the adoption of the draft San Diego Union High School District Governance Handbook. And we have a speaker slip, please, Stephen McDowell.
All right.
By the way, you don't say who won, but
I will.
Cindy will get it.
Because it's after 10.
It's after 10.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, it's because Scott walked up?
I think it's on a timer if we don't set it earlier.
Our clock's on 3.
Okay, you ready?
Don't tell her. They didn't get
more
time.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Thank you for allowing me to talk on this topic. I sent in the email to the board before, but I want to go over some different ideas as to why I think at least the minimum part of this handbook should be pulled out. In part, if you look at just the rationale that you're providing up above that, you're asking that we want to operate with consistency, saying that if it's an email, you're going to treat it differently than if I give a phone call to a board member. That's not going to be consistent. You're going to find the public possibly trying to communicate to you in different paths to ensure that different things happen. Also, multiple times in there, it requires these things should go to the appropriate person. If you're going to have all emails directed to the superintendent, that's not going to happen. And you can tell that that is a brand new part of this whole handbook because it says the superintendent so that he can deal with it. Everything else in there talks about gender, non-gender stuff. It's the superintendent's this and that. So I'm sure someone would say, no, let's just take out, even though Eric's a great superintendent and he is the one.
I'm fine with gender neutral.
Yeah, that should have been out.
Sure.
And the third thing I want to, this will just kind of wait. If you look at it, you've got repeat requests, review, redirect. You cover all those aspects as to how you want to handle protocol with the public. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking of someone from the public. For example, I wasn't part of the whole group of people, but just put it, just think about like the William Harvey situation. Would you want every email that came to you guys that involved William Harvey from the public to be replied back with a very simple, thank you for sending me this email. I'm directing it to the superintendent. He'll follow up on it. What would that have done with your relationship with the public? And I'm sure there's other topics where you get something and you go, do I really want to be the first thing I want to do is send something back saying, thank you very much, it's going to the superintendent, versus going through the process that you have up above, which is to look at it, follow up on it, find out if there's someone more appropriate to have that discussion versus it going, thank you, we're sending it on to the superintendent. So from my point, I would just, I know there might have been well-meaning as to why that was put in, but I would just take it off from a free speech bomb and also just the things that's going to probably hurt you guys in terms of communicating with the public on things where you want to have a small dialogue first.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to start or do you want me to start?
Go right ahead.
Well, I was going to say, again, this was a document that's brought before us with the opportunity to make tweaks if we would like to. But I would like to say that to the email in particular, that portion, we can tweak it a little, I think, no problems. I think we got to that point after a discussion about when emails come to all of us, do all of us need to respond? And I think what the point was we were reaching was that we all could, even if it was just to say something as simple as, thank you for your input, I will be referring it to the superintendent. Or it could be to whomever was the right person, but if we didn't know, he would take care of it. So I don't. That was my recollection. So if we want to tweak that, I have no
problem. Yeah, I thought that was...
where we were coming from, too.
I didn't feel like that at all. My impression is, maybe I don't see it here, but it's that every board member must reveal each relationship. Where is that?
Yeah,
it's
there.
That was in there.
I didn't see it. And so I was wondering...
Mrs. Hirtenshaw, I mean, if your purpose was to tweak this, why didn't we put this on for first read?
Yeah,
that's what I suggested.
Well, I mean, we were four of us were at the meeting, so I thought if we had time to read it, we could comment and get back to me this past week since last Thursday. But if we need to set it aside.
Well, I had a point. It was all-day conference that we had and had a chance to have a lot of discussions. And I think that particular point about emailing was part of the broader point of the role that each school board member has and then our individual authority. And as we talked about, each board member we don't have our own authority to make decisions. We only authority is a governing board. And so if we can certainly respond to anybody that emails us, but if we are trying to solve the problem individually or that's an issue. And so I think it was being more consistent in our messaging out to the public so that they understood that we are listening, we want to hear their concerns, but that we individually can't solve that problem, and that we need to either address it as a board in public, or we need to send it on and need to keep in the loop our district.
That might have been the intent, but it certainly doesn't read that way.
It doesn't read
it
that way.
It tells us exactly what they're going to do.
I know it
does. They will
okay.
thank the
so,
individual.
Okay,
so
we
so
can,
we can change that. I think
and
that's something.
And the point of that is, I think if you're going to say that, we want to listen to you, is that then why do you say at that point, then come to a board meeting? That should be the response from the board
members. Now, where are you reading?
I'm just reading, listening to what Amy was saying, because usually, I mean, it seemed like in that meeting, you guys were kind of like mad when people show up. You're like, well, you know,
no,
they're mad.
No, but
I'm like
I think,
thinking, this is democracy.
I think the conversation was, if it's a parent, that maybe they need to just talk to the teacher, or maybe they need to talk to the principal,
maybe they need to represent us better.
And so we need to help them be directed to the right place. And if we know that, we can say, please speak to Principal Camacho.
I
think it was to not let problems lay until the next board meeting. Because, you know, if somebody makes a question tomorrow on March 16th and the responses will come to our meeting on April 19th, you know, that's a month that was lost.
I don't get that from this. Is that I think, too, as I also said, that, which I don't see because you were there, is that how long you need to respond to a parent. Is I think we didn't talk about that because we had those parents that were pretty upset. And that's one thing I mentioned in the meeting is I want you to be more responsive because when those parents, I think that's when they get mad is when we don't respond. And that's when they get here and they become angry. Yeah.
And I just want to say to Ms. Lee, who spoke earlier, that when you did email me, I asked Mr. Colleen to speak with you, and I did see that he had responded to you. So I'm sorry that if he didn't acknowledge that it was on my behalf. So I'm sorry about that, but I did ask him to follow up with you on both of those occasions, so I am sorry about that.
Well, you've done the same thing with me, and I sent you emails that you don't respond to. No, Joanne, I will not shush. You shush.
Well, so where's the part about the board revealing any part of relationship? Because I don't see it. So where is that?
You never acknowledge people, Eric. You need to acknowledge people that write to you. Shameful.
Okay, well, how about we work with one portion of this at a time so that if we look at the portion regarding the emails...
Where are you at?
I'm on...
I don't like this.
That's,
student purpose, focus over again.
That is on page 312 of the agenda. It's in meeting guidelines.
This is number... I'm looking at the bottom of page 9 of the protocol, if you can find the page. When board members receive an email, either individually or as a group, we don't have to say they will. We could say that they thank the individual for the
message. Where
are you at? Issues/concerns via email under the protocol for responding to staff or community concerns or complaints.
No, I still don't even understand the whole point of this.
Representatives.
The way that we want to communicate with the public is up to us.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the purpose of this is so that if you get new board members in or very compliant and want to do what you say, you can throw this on their face and say, this is what we agreed to.
Okay, so there's a 0.0
chance
you're
going to agree to
it. I'm
having a conversation with my board up here, and my comment to that would be, this was sent out. Did we get any responses from any of our board members?
I emailed Eric.
Okay, did you give language suggestion change, or did you just say...
No, I said it was a violation of my First Amendment. That's what I said to him.
Okay, then we need to start
and
that
also,
at the beginning. Of
I still don't see where it says every board member must reveal prior relationship to someone spoken
that's
about
on,
the district.
That's
where is
on
that?
Meeting guidelines on page 312.
So to
ensure there's no hidden agendas or relationships and that all issues and concerns can be dealt openly by all members.
Okay, that's not what I said.
Yeah, well, it was about relationships.
Prior relationships,
about
if anyone on the board, someone comes here, or contract, mm-hmm. then the board members should reveal mm-hmm. their prior relationship. That does not state that. And, you know, that was even in the newspaper that I requested that.
I think we should just table this,
this is just
for some other time.
Well, that's kind of what happened with the workshops, is that we tabled them for like 2 years, and then we get called out for not having any protocols or having worked as a board to establish
we have a board
some guidelines.
I certainly would rather have this discussion when we have more members of the public here.
Yeah.
Well, and Mr. Salazar, I'm sorry you didn't have to the meeting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too, that you didn't have it in the evening or you didn't have it on a weekend.
He works for
We tried this for a couple of years and never found it.
Just because someone works doesn't mean you should be holding that against them.
We scheduled it prior time on a weekend and then had board members not willing to participate then. So, well...
I mean, if you're going to put this and you can't have 5 people agree on it, then it's not.
What's the point? Go ahead and call for the vote.
If we need some language to be cleaned up, I don't want to just adopt it as is.
We should have had a first reading.
Well, then this is a first reading. And if you want to suggest language for the next meeting.
Okay, well, do I have a motion or shall I make a motion that we bring this back for a second reading in the meantime?
What do you want to achieve with this?
I want to have some more protocols. It's standard practice for boards to go beyond just having their board bylaws, but to have annual opportunities to get together and discuss how we're going to work as a board and do the work as a board together.
There's many things in here that have nothing to do with working as a board. Setting time limits for the public.
They should be able to speak for as long as we need on some of these issues that are, you know, parents are here and they feel they're emotional about. These are their children.
Okay, so this is, as it says, it's an ongoing process and discussion. And it's a framework for us to have effective governance. And we need to start somewhere with having some of this language and agreement. We can modify this document starting tonight or starting at a next read.
This is effective governance when people are speaking. It's a democracy. I mean, that's how we're having a discussion to get to a point. I don't see, when we can't agree on this, that's not...
I don't understand the blanket statement of feeling you're giving up your First Amendment rights.
When you're talking about emails that we can't talk back with, like it's almost like, sorry, you can't return a parent's email, just send it back in. That is a problem.
We were agreeing that we could.
And that's not the way it comes across in this.
Well, and Ms. Murray, you were there, and we did have a discussion about this. And once again, it's not...
that out there, too.
And it's not limiting that. I think that understanding what our authority is and the possibility of violating the Brown Act, if we all...
So who's violating the Brown Act?
Prevention of
it's
that.
Prevention, well, it's prevention. By having protocols, it prevents it.
So
and
who's violating
them.
The Brown Act? So I don't talk to anybody here, so who's doing that?
What I'm talking about is if you have emails that go out, or if you're talking to the public about what you're going to do, and it appears on our agenda, and that gets out into the public, and then is printed or is shared with other board members, then that's a violation.
That's not a violation of Brown Act. Brown Act is when the three board members talk about something.
No one
hears it. I said, this is, they've always said, come to a board meeting and speak. I mean, that's pretty much what we say, is that if you want to, we just talk to Eric or come to a board meeting and speak. No one's ever said, I'm going to vote like this, or I'm going to do this, or anything. And if that's the case, I don't believe it.
I think
what the risk was that in replying to all, or that...
But who's done that? Who's done that?
We would, have board members that would be signaling their potential action on future items before the board. And so it was to protect the board from doing that. And
who did that on this board? Because even then you said somebody hit all. I've never had an email to me said all from another board member.
None are coming to mind, but again, this
because
is...
Because I don't know why it, your parameters it, will never happen. Who did it? Obviously somebody that I don't know, because I didn't do it, so...
These are not necessarily corrections of what has been done. These are statement of facts, so that as new people come on board, they will know, oh, I can't do that.
Right, we have board policies that reiterate that.
I mean, these people are elected.
I mean, come on, they're elected. They act like they've never been under boards or had any experience.
They're going to be exposed to the situation, and they'll follow it.
Well, I had sent this out prior to even having it posted publicly and soliciting suggestions, but I think it's clear that there's some additional work that the board members would like to see. So if you would like to table it, we could handle this like a first read of a board policy, and if you have suggestions on edits that you would like to see made to this, I'm happy to take those so that we can propose edits.
Okay. Do we need a motion to, or can we just pull this? It hasn't been moved or seconded.
It is not.
We can just motion if you all agree
to
table
let it be a first read. Okay. Then we will do that, and we will be sending it out. And if you would send in either areas that you want, you would either like removed or replaced or wordsmithed, please provide language that you would like to see. And we will bring that back.
Can I say one more thing?
Please.
We did spend a day discussing a lot of these items. We did come to consensus as a group on those. And so I would hate that if we try to rework an entire policy and protocol at a board meeting. We certainly talked about the items that board members are concerned about, but there is a reason for protocol, and there is a recommendation that school board members do have them, and we are different than other elected officials in the way that we work as a board. So I just wanted to add that.
All right. Thank you. That brings us to our information items, and I think we've had our staff do a lot of reporting this evening. Do we have anything further from business services?
No.
educational services. You've been awfully quiet this evening in educational services. So no. Dr. Grove, do you have anything?
Two quick things. Eric mentioned earlier we wrapped up our high school selection process, and based on the numbers and expected attrition, we were able to offer enrollment to every student in the district, grade 9 through 12, to their first choice school. And quite honestly, for the first time in about 5 years, we didn't even have to kind of do any crazy facility things to fit kids in where they wanted to go. We are achieving some better balance with the program work that we've been doing, the bell schedule changes. And so we were able to just kind of let kids go where they wanted to go. Two academies will be at capacity, over capacity now, but we expect with attrition they'll be down to capacity.
What's
so
the numbers, Mike, on that?
What's
the population you're expecting at the schools?
At each school?
SDA was 19-something and
yeah,
close
so
to LCC.
SDA is within 8 students of where we projected them to open this year. So I think we're projecting them to be at 1908.
Yeah, there were then a dozen kids or so, maybe yeah. 2 dozen kids between LCC and SDA. Mm-hmm.
LCC almost exactly the same size.
Okay.
South End, I want to say 26, 24, something like that at CCA, and 25 something at Torrey Pines. So,
okay,
a good balance. So, we were pleased that we were able to, our goal is to always get every kid into the school they want to attend, and we were able to do that. So, that's good news. And then the other quick good news item is that, as you saw in a Friday update, LCC did receive their full authorization from International mm-hmm. Baccalaureate, so they are now officially an IB diploma program school, and IB courses will be offered next year, and next year's juniors will be eligible to begin their coursework towards the IB diploma. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Ms. Brzee, Human Resources, any further updates for us this evening?
Nothing tonight.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Miller, anything else from you? All right. I have already got your comment on future agenda items. Anything else that we need to bring forward? And I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you all for toughing out. Mm-hmm.